You're listening to Fakeologist Audio Chat. To connect to our always-on and always-streaming audio chat, go to fakeologist.com/radio3. To participate in the chat, go to fakeologist.com/audio chat. Each day, we compress and upload the day's chat, be it big or small. Leave a quick message, do a whole show. All are welcome when it's related to fakeology. Now, on with today's audio.
Whether we don't have a heart attack or whether we remember the keys, we say that we're paranoid. But in fact, of course, it's a long way from the real meaning of paranoia. We do. I mean, people use this term all the time like that.
Yes.
It's become a sort of thing. I'm paranoid about missing my flight, come on. Or, you know what, I'm always paranoid about losing my keys.
And often in that context, what they're really talking about is fearful or anxious.
So
that the word's sort of extended to extreme anxiety, sort of, and they use the word paranoia.
What's the difference between paranoia and anxiety then?
With paranoia, the fear is of malice from other people. So paranoia is very specific to perceptions about other people wanting to do us harm. There's the old saying of just because I'm paranoid doesn't mean the people aren't out to get me. And occasionally that's true. You know, you may have some exaggerated fears, but there may be some basis for it. So in which case it may be a realistic concern rather than paranoia.
Hmm.
But if you're starting to see that the person has an ongoing pattern of perception of malice in different contexts, it's really suggesting that there's paranoia there.
Hmm. How common is the disorder anyway?
It affects, depending on the study that you look at, between 2 and 4% of the population, which I think is actually reasonably high.
Quite a lot, isn't it?
More often men than women, but it can affect both.
Yeah, I mean, the sort of beliefs that crop up with someone with paranoid personality disorder?
Well, it might be sort of fairly minor things like getting the wrong change in the, you know, in the supermarket or department store and immediately assuming that it was deliberate. So assuming that people are out to get you or hurt you, even if it's in a minor way. If there's something like, you know, a tree that dies in the garden, there might be a suspicion that the neighbours have poisoned my trees. They might have more sort of extreme beliefs about people are tapping my phone, the AFP are listening into my conversations. You know, so there may be sometimes more extreme and unreasonable suspicions about other people's motives and other people's behaviours.
I mean, the paranoid person would say, well, you know, just that I know these things and you don't.
And exactly. One of the problems with paranoia is the belief is so strong, it seems so valid, that it's very hard for people to recognise that the problem is their thinking. You know, so if you talk to people with those sort of beliefs, they always believe that the problem is other people and the world that they live in. And sometimes it's actually, you know, if you can actually get some insight and help people to understand that actually I have a problem with my thinking, and in fact a lot of these thoughts that I have are unfounded, if you can actually get them to that stage, you make huge progress. People with paranoia also tend to have a distrust of public institutions. So they may, for example, be very sceptical of climate scientists, and they may say climate scientists are only claiming that there's climate change because they want grants. Will be very quick to see conspiracies. So the CSIRO is conspiring with the Bureau of Meteorology and the United Nations and are coming up with all sorts of things that are unbelievable, you know, and they're trying to get one over us and they've got their own agenda. So a tendency to really mistrust public institutions as well as individuals.
Brian Cox, who I interviewed recently, he's got an agenda, has he?
Yes, and that would be a really good example. So someone who's paranoid or has paranoid personality disorder would say, oh, yes, he's just trying to sell his books and he's come up with this. He's got a very good, you know, PR thing and that's really worked for him and he's doing it only for his own motives. So tendency to suspect people's motives and judge them harshly rather than sort of you know, looking at the overall evidence and weighing it in a balanced way.
Well, that's right. It's a way of thinking, isn't it? And that's very hard to attack.
And in fact, the internet is actually full of people like that who band together with other people who have similar conspiracy theories. And you see it, you know, sometimes on, you know, even some of the mass shootings, and there's a whole lot of people who will argue that that's all been made up because people want to, you know, control guns. Or there may be, I think 9/11 was considered a conspiracy, or it never happened. And there's a whole lot of people out there who find each other and really, really sort of promote conspiracy theories.
Yeah, I guess they think, of course, that they're the only ones who see the truth. That's the trouble. Yeah. You know, they're the prophet who's not believed in his own land.
And that is the nature of paranoid thinking, that it feels so true, that it's very hard to even have self-doubts or to question one's own beliefs. So
the more you're attacked, the more reinforced you might feel that someone has to bear witness to this truth because no one else will see it.
And evidence to the contrary doesn't weaken your belief. So if you are sort of a rational thinking person and you're psychologically healthy and you have, you know, you've held a belief for a long time, but someone presents you with really good scientific evidence or really good arguments, you might even be open to changing your mind or considering that there could be another way of thinking. Whereas if somebody has a strong paranoid beliefs, evidence becomes totally irrelevant. And in fact, the evidence will just strengthen their beliefs that, you know, that the people are trying to influence them or change their minds.
Malik on the highway says, Phil, I just finished watching the Unabomber series on Foxtel. Sounds a lot like the way the Unabomber thought as well.
I actually don't know enough about that particular case, but yeah, it may well be.
Do we know what causes it?
There are a number of risk factors which altogether only contribute to a very small percentage of the known risks. So generally, most of the risks are not known, but there is some evidence that genes play a role with schizophrenia, infection in pregnancy, birth trauma, and substance abuse, sometimes amongst young people who already have the genetic disposition, having marijuana or other substances can trigger the first episode of schizophrenia, which then continues. We know that there's a higher prevalence amongst people from low socioeconomic status or background, and there's also the dopamine hypothesis, that things that will trigger high levels of dopamine, which is a neurotransmitter in the brain, will actually trigger more psychotic episodes.
Let's take a couple of calls. Shane's on the line with us.
Hi, Shane.
Hey, guys. I think this is a bit of a divine intervention because I've been dealing with my son for the last 2.5 years with all of this counselling. Not a chance. Dad can take control of his actions. He's 30 years old. He's a grown man. I would bang my head against the brick wall. So all I could do was support him in his endeavours to try and help him deal with the problem that was at hand. And everything you've mentioned, he's now got himself a job. He lives in an apartment, shared apartment with a friend of his, and I think we're through it. I would hope so, anyway.
And that's one of the most difficult things about this condition is families and families observing people that they love being obsessed by paranoid delusions. So the fact that he has managed to get a job and live and find somewhere to live, I think is incredibly positive. Interestingly, with this condition, people can function just to some degree with this condition. And hopefully, once people do have some stability in their life, and it may be, you know, having a place to live, having a job, feeling that he's, you know, he's valuable or he's making some contribution, that is psychologically very stabilising. It's not going to cure the disorder, but it can actually make his life much more stable.
Bear in mind, we're in the early stages, so we're in week 3, so my fingers are damn well crossed.
Yeah,
but he seems to be doing all right, and fingers crossed, difference. I mean, every week is a new week.
Yeah.
show, and hopefully it's not a bad one.
Shane, I you've got a very tough gig there, and it sounds like you're doing a really fantastic job. And
tough gig wasn't a word for it, I don't think. We've been through the hard yards, I've got to tell you.
Absolutely.
Good luck with it, Shane.
Thanks,
man. Thanks for telling the story, too. Barry's on the line. Hi, Barry. Thanks for waiting on.
Oh, yeah. G'day. That's all right. Yeah, you mentioned about if people were to question the events of 9/11, for example, or other conspiracy theories, or people that thought that their phones were being tapped. I mean, at what point do you diagnose someone as such if there's been actual documented evidence that phones were being tapped? I mean, the NSA have been proven to be tapping like 70% of all Android phones worldwide. That's actually a fact now. Unfortunately, I don't mean to go down the conspiracy road here, but most people don't trust the JFK theory, the official story, or even 9/11, for example. You don't want to be pigeonholing people, I suppose. I mean, you talked about the mistrust of public institutions as well. I mean, if you had have said 10, 20 years ago that what the Catholic Church had been up to, you know, that was a crazy conspiracy theory, but now it's all wide open. I mean, what we think now might be crazy, what are these people that you're referring to? They may actually be onto something.
Yeah,
I think
in some cases that's true, and I think the example that you give is probably not a bad example.
A point well made, Barry. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you.
No, it's a point well made.
Yeah.
And it's a point that the paranoid person would make too. I mean,
yes. And it comes back to that whole thing of just because I'm paranoid doesn't mean that people aren't to get me, or that, you know, that institutions aren't corrupt in some cases. And I think that's a valid point.
What about antipsychotics medication? Is it useful?
Yeah, look, for a lot of people it is, and again, it depends on how complex the presentation is. So for people with schizophrenia, often antipsychotic medication will reduce the paranoia, will reduce the delusions, will reduce the hallucinations, or sometimes eliminate. And for some people, they feel much better when they're taking antipsychotics. Even being able to recognise that you have paranoid thoughts at times, one of the most useful things is to be able to label that as a thought. Insight into your own condition is probably the most important component of getting better, because the thoughts feel 100% true. So that ability to be able to step back and say, I know I'm having this thought, and I know it's a thought, and I know it's just part of my condition. And again, recognizing that it's actually not the world that's unsafe when you're feeling terribly anxious. It's actually my thinking that's the problem. One of the questions I often ask is, okay, one possibility is, you know, everything is really dangerous and terrible. The other is it's a thinking problem. When people recognize that it's a thinking problem, they start to get better.
We don't know what causes it.
Well, you know, there's all sorts of theories. There's some evidence that genetic factors play a role, that birth defects play a role, that drugs can play a role, but those contribute to only, you know, a small percentage. You know, there's still a lot of people with schizophrenia that are, you know, unexplained. With schizophrenia, it is definitely a brain condition. With a personality disorder, it's not something you can see on brain scans, but it's certainly a consistent pattern of behaviour.
Interesting. Yeah, all right. Zombie drugs, then Alzheimer's is my text. Maybe. All right. Always fascinating to talk with you. I appreciate your time, Simon. Thank you.
Why do you think that Truman has never come close to discovering the true nature of his world until now?
We accept the reality of the world with which we're presented. It's as simple as that.
Have you ever questioned the nature of your reality? Open your eyes.
We were just walking around in some kind of fog. I think we're all in a trance. We're walking around like zombies. I don't think we're even aware of ourselves or our own reaction to things. We're just going around all day like unconscious machines. And meanwhile, there's all of this rage and worry and uneasiness building up inside us.
I don't have to tell you things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad. It's a depression. Everybody's out of work or scared of losing their job. A dollar buys a nickel's worth. Banks are going bust. Shopkeepers keep a gun under the counter. Punks are running wild in the street. There's nobody anywhere who seems to know what to do, and there's no end to it.
I imagine that right now you're feeling a bit like Alice, tumbling down the rabbit hole. I can see it in your eyes. You have the look of a man who accepts what he sees because he is expecting to wake up. Ironically, this is not far from the truth.
I want to live a real life. I want to dream any longer.
I think it's because if we allowed ourselves to see what we do every day, we might just find it too nauseating. In the way we treat other people. You know, every day, several times a day, I walk into my apartment building, the doorman calls me Mr. Gregory, and I call him Jimmy. Already, what's the difference between that and the southern plantation owner who's got slaves? See, I think that an act of murder is committed in that moment when I walk into that building. You know, because here's a dignified, intelligent man, a man of my own age. And when I call him Jimmy, then he becomes a child and I'm an adult because I can buy my way into the building.
We know the air is unfit to breathe and our food is unfit to eat. We sit watching our TVs while some local newscaster tells us that today we had 15 homicides and 63 violent crimes, as if that's the way it's supposed to be. We know things are bad, worse than bad. They're crazy. It's like everything everywhere is going crazy, so we don't go out anymore. We sit in the house, and slowly the world we're living in is getting smaller, and all we say is, please, at least leave us alone in our living rooms. Let me have my toaster and my TV and my steel-belted radios, and I won't say anything. Just leave us alone. Well, I'm not going to leave you alone. I want you to get mad.
Civilization, which leaves so many of its citizens unsatisfied and drives them into revolt, either has or deserves the prospect of a lasting existence.
Let me tell you why you're here. You're here because you know something. What you know you can't explain, but you feel it. You felt it your entire life. That there's something wrong with the world. You don't know what it is, but it's there, like a splinter in your mind, driving you mad. It is this feeling that has brought you to me. Do you know what I'm talking about?
The Matrix.
Do you want to know what it is?
Everything in this world is magic. Except to the magician.
We're all bored now. But has it ever occurred to you, Wally, that the process that creates this boredom that we see in the world now may very well be a self-perpetuating, unconscious form of brainwashing created by a world totalitarian government based on money? And that all of this is much more dangerous than one thinks? And it's not just a question of individual survival, Wally, but that somebody who's bored is asleep, and somebody who's asleep will not say no?
Once in a while, one of us wakes up. It's not supposed to happen, but it does.
Dreams, they feel real while we're in them, right? It's only when we wake up that we realize something is actually strange.
I don't want you to protest. I don't want you to ride. I don't want you to write to your congressman because I wouldn't know what to tell you to write. I don't know what to do about the depression and the inflation and the Russians and the crying in the street. All I know is that first, you've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value.
There's no way out. God, can't you see?
Those idiots don't even know where we live.
The Matrix is everywhere. It is all around us. Even now, in this very room. You can see it when you look out your window or when you turn on your television. You can feel it when you go to work, when you go to church, when you pay your taxes. It is the world that has been pulled over your eyes to blind you from the truth.
What truth?
It's a nightmare!
That you are a slave, Neo. Like everyone else, you were born into bondage, born into a prison that you cannot smell or taste or touch. A prison for your mind. Unfortunately, no one can be told what the Matrix is. You have to see it for yourself.
Shattering grand illusion.
It is real.
Pay no attention to that man behind the curtain.
Do you know a lot of New Yorkers who keep talking about the fact that they want to leave but never do? I think that New York is the new model for the new concentration camp, where the camp has been built by the inmates themselves, and the inmates are the guards, and they have this pride in this thing they've built. They've built their own prison, and so they exist in a state of schizophrenia, where they are both guards and prisoners, and as a result, they no longer have, having been lobotomized, the capacity to leave the prison they've made, or to even see it as a prison.
Or to even see it as a prison.
Listening to another hour of Fakeologist Audio Chat on Fakeologist.com. You're listening to another hour of Fakeologist Audio Chat on Fakeologist.com. You're listening to another hour of Fakeologist Audio Chat on Fakeologist.com. Another hour of Fakeologist Audio Chat on Fakeologist.com.
Oh, but I bet it won't change no more.
Good afternoon, sir.
If you believe, they put a man on the moon. Yeah, that's to get you in here, man. You see, to get you in. We don't want a woman's point of view, we want a crazy mother's point of view, sexuality, and things do through from every point of view going wider. Human. I think Wayfaring Stranger is doing a wonderful job there of putting some of the more relevant tunes up. Wayfaring Stranger, can I make a request? Don't mute, mate. Continuity will go awry there. You've just muted that. Right. I can't believe it. I'm chasing an elephant. Yeah, it's not going to work. Okay, then. You're listening to Fakeologist Radio on Fakeologist Discord. Live stream chat. We have Delete the Elite, Napoleon Wilson, Phil Blanks in chat, and Wayfaring Stranger. He's the gentleman who's been playing tunes for you for this past half hour. And Delete the Elite cannot hear me.
Sorry about that, guys.
Wayfaring, can you give like a story behind that? Well, I just missed the beginning, but what were you playing and why?
No, I was eating and playing some music and I left and forgot it. So sorry.
He never left it. He did that on purpose. It was wonderful.
No, I'm not lying, dude. I actually left.
Cool, man. It's nice that you got the capabilities to play tunes. Cool.
Yeah. You don't have to believe me, though.
I thought you would, at least that way we can request songs.
If you like it, I can do it again.
Yeah. No, I wanted to get Phil in there as well. I could see Phil was lurking. And I don't like you lurking, Phil. I like to know where you are. So what have you been looking at today, Phil?
Only the best of the best here.
Now, I know you look at crazy stuff, my gun, what's going on? What have you been examining?
Nothing noteworthy.
Nothing?
Yeah.
See, I took a day off today as well. I took a day off, didn't feel right. Went to the bus stop, hurt my ankle, and then just turned around and come home. And I thought, right, this is the day of discovery day. And I've not witnessed much myself. It's been really quiet. Well, anyway, you're in the Fakeologist live stream chat. You're listening to Phil Banks and Wayfaring Stranger. I'm just going to meet for a second, gentlemen. We're back soon. Okay, we're back in the live chat now. My name is Napoleon Wilson. You're in Fakeologist Discord. Okay, so we have Phil in there. Sorry, Phil. Is my microphone working? 2212. 2212.
Roger. Loud and clear.
Roger. So come on, Puff. There must be a reason you came in here tonight. Apart from me, trying to pretend you were a girl. Come on. Why are you in here? You're full of information, man. I love you. Give us something laudable.
I was gonna see if you were gonna give any more information. You said something interesting yesterday. I think it was all of the kings, all the royalty is a facade, or it's fake. So that was something like straight out of your mouth. So I don't know the exact words, but I'd be curious to.
Well, I will forgive you for paraphrasing because I have no idea what I did say. So as long as you can frame it in the right way, I can pretty much refer back to where I am. I can't remember who said it, but they said if you don't lie, you don't have to have a good memory. And that is me. So yeah, it is a facade. The royalty is a facade. Where to start though? Well, obviously the change in the class of royalty now. We're seeing that gone. And we actually seen that, in the prior century with the Lifetime actors and the family of actors. So with the Fonders and the Redgraves and, you know, people who were in acting families. So what is royalty? Is that just a word that we've put for the people that are doing the figurehead? Is the person who actually is the groomer of the stool? You know, that's a lifelong, family tradition. You know, that's passed on to generations. What is an actor? What is royalty? I think that's a good question, Phil.
Well, it goes a long way in explaining why the royals, also have the same customs, the same, like, part in the stories of showing us, like, you know, George Bush and Putin together wearing Masonic clothing, and then same with the royals, they're also doing the same type of stuff, like wearing those things, and so it's all just a facade, right?
Seems to be, really does seem to be. The education system that they come from is probably the only bit of one-upmanship that they come from. You know, they might have a bit of one-upmanship on someone who didn't go to Eton or Harvard or Yale, you know, but they still know all the same scripts. Yeah, thought so. As always, Phil, you were a very, very, very intelligent fellow, but you do convolute things with a lot of words. And I'm a potted, so you have to be short and simple with me, right?
Yeah, it helps everything.
Yeah, it does, but not with you. And you're a potted, so you should know where I'm coming from. But no, nevertheless, what would you sound? No. I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. I'm talking with someone with an open mind. Excuse me, one second. No. So, what would be the soundbite? What would be the best soundbite to get people involved in just opening their mind a little bit? So, for instance, you could say to someone, did you know that the fella who came up with the computer actually killed himself by taking one bite out of an apple? And that, you know, that could make people go, oh, you know, what? That's funny.
Are you like saying this in a way that means something deeper, that the meaning of taking a bite of an apple and dying from it is somehow relevant.
No, well, the fellow that invented the computer apparently killed himself by having a bite out of an apple, and that's why Apple computers are called Apple computers, and there's one bite missing out of it. And also that corresponds with the Bible, and, you know, what I mean is that's enough to get people intrigued.
Yeah, sounds good.
But it's true, not hidden.
Well, I mean, it's true to the quote-unquote, the narrative, as they call it.
Some said
the
words are going
crazy. I've moved you, bring in deleted. Here as well, don't you worry. Right, Apple computers, right, why has the Apple got one bite out of it, and the guy that, Gaia, don't run off. He's run off again.
You just moved him in here?
Yeah, I can do that, because I'm special. Gaia, just listen to me question a sec. The guy who invented computers died from taking one bite of an apple with cyanide in the apple. And now we have an emblem on computers of an apple. Right. I just wanted to ask Gaia that. Gaia, that's brilliant. It's not hidden. It's just the way things are, and it's a natural progressive step. He got, and he was muted. So, yeah. But Phil, that's what I was going to say, that is a good introduction in to get people into ask questions. So why?
They're gonna worry that they're biting into the apple then.
Well, of course, yeah, because it's a computer. That's what it is. But
what do you think? Open up your computer and start learning at that point. Is that what you're gonna insinuate, that they're gonna?
No. Well, you see, the funny thing is I was saying this to you not in the way of any kind of synopsis. I was saying to you, right, we're gonna be short and snappy. We're gonna change things to a punchy style, instead of making it long and winded like we usually do.
Looking at it that way, just for the kicks of it, then that the taking a bite of the apple is itself like the quote unquote diving down the rabbit hole, or just looking behind the veil, or whatever you want to call the revelatory. This is the biting of the apple here. We're in the apple, right?
Yeah, definitely. But all I was thinking now is like, because the way you like to analyze things, I was thinking of how we could analyze that first step of someone being introduced to the so-called conspiracy world.
Is it a perilous act?
Where does the apple come from? Was somebody biting into an apple's laced with cyanide?
Yeah, that was thingy leg, Chori.
Alan
Chori.
Oh, okay. Didn't know about that.
Yeah, well, that's where the apple emblem comes from. It doesn't come from, you know, the Bible thing that was sort of incorporated, because that was added to the story, because we don't even know if Alan Turing actually died from an apple. You know, it seems to be this running narrative. But yeah, anyway, evening, mate. But no, just the way Phil likes to examine things, I was thinking we could examine the first step of getting someone to look at whatever the conspiracy might be, whether it's moon landing, global warming.
It's kind of on you then, perhaps, to give them, or whoever, to give them a forewarning if there is any danger involved, if there is any. Do you see it that way, Napoleon?
Well, I think of it more like fishing. I'll be honest with you. Evening, John. I think of it more like, if you know the type of person, you can pretty much throw something that might just entice them to say, well, what do you mean? And that's what I've always hoped for. And just like I was saying there, because you are good at analysing and getting right down to the grave, so it'd be nice to see if there was a step.
Let me see if I can pull up these notes. But I had a metaphor instead of the apple in this case, which is another sweet dish or sweet thing to eat, which is whipped cream. You have to serve it cold. You can't be heated as you serve whipped cream. So the metaphor is giving them something sweet, like an apple, but it's kind of you got to make it airy and fluffy. It can't be flat. It's got to have a little tanginess to it, and it has to come at the end of the meal. It can't be itself a meal. The whipped cream, but hold on, I gotta look for that. I'm sorry.
It's okay. Good afternoon, John. How are you? Oh, no, he's muted. Sorry, Kamer. So, delete the elite. Yes. What would you consider a good pointer? Like, for instance, remember, everyone remembers Columbo, a brilliant show. And it used to start off with the murder, and you'd find out who did the murder, and then you'd slowly get introduced back to it, and Columbo come in, and then basically you get this, it's an agreement where there's a murderer, there's the problem, boom, and you bring it together like that. There is a way of bridging the gap similar with conspiracy theories. So, you know, someone, for argument's sake, well, talking about Titanic the other day, we'll change it now, we'll say the Holocaust, top of my head, right, so, now, if you was to say to someone, well, you know, who works in, I don't know, the foundry business, and, you know, or someone who works in the crematorium business, and you know, they dispose the bodies, you could say to them, well, you know, in actual fact, the Holocaust probably would have, they would have still been burning bodies till round about summer 1982. If there were 6 million Jews die. So it's just a way of enticing someone, but it's actually factually correct if you were to go and test, you know, the equipment that was on hand at these certain, you know, places. So how would you entice someone just to look at something which we've all been told to take for granted, JFK, 9-1-1, Twin Towers, New York, nukes, World War II, what, anything that you could say just to make people feel a little bit more, oh, right, yeah, I have a little bit of expertise in that department, maybe I might know something. Because we had a gentleman in the other day, who's a mason, his name's Red Lion, and he's got his own physics going on, he believes planes can fly at 500 feet. At 300 feet at 500 mile an hour. So, you know, just to put things straight, what would bring you into this conspiracy world?
Yeah, it's a very difficult question, and I've tried to with, for instance, my sister, and she knows a little bit about it, and some of my best friends that I regularly hang out with. And I don't know, I usually just try to go for either the money part about our financial system or 9/11. I've touched on the moon sometimes, and I try to stay at those things. I don't want to be too controversial because people might flip out if I tell them about the Second World War and the Hull hoax and all that stuff, and the nukes. I don't know. I try to show them short bits of information like lemmings on Mars or no stars on the moon or 9/11, maybe where the plane sort of teleports itself through in a few of the frames, for instance, with Simon Shack with the September clues. Because to me, it seems like a lot of people, they want to learn everything in a snapshot. And
oh, God, yeah.
I try to, and they have a short attention span, and a lot of people don't like these subjects.
You do know the next generation have an even shorter attention span.
I did not know that.
No, the kids nowadays. Now we will watch a documentary. We will say, no, September clues. How long? Too long? No, I want it in a meme.
Yeah.
You want everything in a meme. So, yeah. No, hang on. Anyway, so we're up to teleporting planes there. Obviously you've seen September Clues. A wonderful video. Once you've seen it, there's a lot to take from it. It's what I'd call a tonic. It will revitalize what you've been looking at, like a lot of films did, but they only did it in the terms of the families being related and politics and government all being, you know, one act. But that was a different thing. That always led me on to the fact, though, that we actually do know that the people who run the place, they're not going to crash planes ever, are they? Never going to crash planes. But that sounds weird. You say there was no planes on September 11th. Why does that still sound weird?
Yeah, I don't know, because because of the brainwashing, I guess, and because I believed it myself for probably 10 years before I found out in 2011 or 2012, was when I really became a truther.
Same year.
Yeah. So I've done this for maybe 6 years, probably. I don't know. It was weird to me as well at first, because at first, I was obviously convinced that it was 19 terrorists and all that. And then, I started to watch documentaries about economics. And then somehow on YouTube that led me into 9/11. And then, there was a guy, I think his name was Jim Lehrer or something like that on YouTube. And he talked about this. And, I don't know. I just got this weird feeling that he was right. And then I became a truther that was sort of obsessed with 9/11. And so I sort of left the economics and all of that with the Rothschilds and all of that. And then I only watched 9/11 for probably months, pretty much all the time in my spare time. I couldn't let go of it. And then it just dawned on me. It wasn't even the physics. It wasn't even, the natural laws of science. It was the fact that I saw Donald Rumsfeld on the lawn smirking and smiling and doing the job of the ambulance personnel. That when it sunk in, that it was Donald Rumsfeld on the lawn at the Pentagon. And then that just sort of amazed me how when it sunk in that, I don't know, the whole world just became different. And then I started looking for
I know exactly what you mean there. That was literally Saturnalia. That was where the people who run the place, oh no, they're going to come out now, outside on the lawn and help out with the people on the ground, you know, picking up bits. So you had all the white shirts and the ties helping out, picking up bits. It's Saturnalia. It's fucking celebration. They loved it. They can't help it. They can't fucking help it. This is why I love the Masons, because fucking idiots. Anyway, that was it, but yeah, they're fucking idiots, aren't they?
Yeah.
But no, yeah, nevertheless, it's, but was that throwing them under the buses? Is that the Masons being outed there, you know, because it's pretty obvious that was the towers of Yakim and Boaz, you know, and then following from that now we've got the domes being, you know, disrupted with the universe and NASA falling.
But yeah. But Napoleon, don't you appreciate all the other stuff that they do?
Do you know? I do. I understand why they do it. I really do.
Why is it? Is it because of power or following an agenda, or why? Why are they doing it? I'm not sure myself.
It's fair, isn't it? They have to just to keep themselves at the top.
Yeah.
So,
that's
what I've been thinking. This is it now. We're at the new age now. The history is starting. You wait. Oh, God, it's going to be so good in 500 years' time. We'll have wars, dragons, space flight. None of it's going to be real. We'll have battles. Yeah, Star Wars. Even though, and no one will leave anywhere.
If they're bastards that you're throwing under the bus, and instead, if they're staying on top, you have another perspective on how things could better function. What would that be?
I'd rather listen to a child just chuntering to himself rather than a child singing a purple dinosaur song. Does that make sense?
You just don't like it. That's it. That's all you're gonna say.
Don't need it. Don't need it. We don't need guidance. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, I'm against all this centralized power just in general. I feel that people should be able to decide for themselves what their society should be like, and I don't want politicians, not even in Sweden where I live, to decide.
Trouble is, free will is the perfect democracy. So if you let free will reign, then you will get the perfect democracy, but you don't get that. So, you know, it's an anachronism, and it's an oxymoron, whatever other word they've invented for it, but it's still a marvellous thought experiment you can put in your own head. How would people have evolved if there wasn't wars? Or the money situations and stuff like that. People succeed in the most terrible of situations, you know, I mean, For instance, you've got Karachi, North Pakistan. They make lots of weapons there, you know, fake weapons or something. But you should see the technology they've got. And they make weapons. And you're looking at it, you're thinking, right, these fellas, these are geniuses. Imagine they were in a normal town.
Yeah.
You know, and that is off the top of my head. The only thing they get wrong is this: instead of saying they're made in China, they say made of China. You know what I mean?
So the theme that I was picking up earlier was that you were saying that it makes sense how, you know, the natural way of people having their own free will wouldn't work, basically, and that it makes sense that people will trick each other, and that's what we would have, and that's what we do have, and it seemed to make sense.
No, that's the black and white. You see, you either take control or you don't. That's what the checkered board is. It's you either do something or you don't. If you don't, then you get what's classed as, you know, chaos. If you take control, then you get order.
I feel that to have a more fair society, people need to be educated about propaganda and how all this crap works.
Fair. Define the word fair. You just said the word fair. The people at the top don't feel the word fair represents them the way it represents you.
Yeah, fair. That's true. I think everyone's going to have their own definition of that, but I'm just saying that it's so skewed today where few people
John wants an unfair society.
Right, John? You have to mask and tape your child's nappy to it because gravity is 2% stronger. There you go. I'm with that.
Napoleon asked for a definition of fair, so what's your definition of unfair, John?
Unfair would be nothing's fair anyways. It's the illusion of fairness that currently exists. There's nothing fair about anything at all. It's not fair that Phil knows more about computers than I do. It's not fair that I know more about guitars than he does. It's not fair that Mahatma knows more about guitars than I do.
Yeah, I want
to force it.
So.
Yeah, I'm saying society is never going to be perfectly, if I may use the word again, fair. It's just that it's so obvious today, at least to all the truthers, that, the big boys sit on all the resources and a lot of knowledge to run the world. And they sit on all the control, all the money, all the organizations, all the politicians. And I just feel that people are being used, and it's like those old cartoons or whatever, that we live in a rat cage or whatever. And I think that people need to wake up to that and to be more educated in how society really works today and how it could work and how to make it better is perhaps a, I don't know if it's a better term than fair, but it might be. I just feel that people in the Western world today are fairly pleased with their situation because they're just, it's sort of like ignorance is bliss. So they live in their happy bubbles and, they don't know what's going on. But, if they did,
well, here's a quick thing I wanted to add to what you're saying. Are you in the Western world, Mr. Elite? You're in Sweden, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm in Sweden, yeah.
Okay, yeah, that's right. So, now, is there lots of... I know somebody from Sweden, but I want your opinion. So, is there lots of rich people in Sweden?
I would say that, the gap between the rich and the poor in Sweden is far less than it is in the U.S., if any of those documentaries have been true that I've watched over the years. Where in the U.S. you have the super rich, the billionaires, and even more than that. And in Sweden you do have a lot of people are fairly well off, like upper middle class or fairly rich. You might have a nice house, a couple of cars, a nice job, nice education. It's a tough question, but I would say it's
a socialist country, right?
Yeah.
Now, so socialism, and, you know, I don't care about the isms. I'm not into capitalism. I'm not into socialism.
Yeah,
I don't I don't necessarily think my thing is with America is if you have a public school system, you are not anything else but a socialist country. There's no way you could have a public school system paid for by taxation and not be a socialist country. Just that fact alone makes you a socialist country.
That's similar to why people need extra licenses for, you know, different sort of vehicles. It's like if you leave America thinking you've got an education, you know, you need this 7.5 ton license now to fulfill your education.
As you kind of described in like a recent episode on Hoaxbusters, that the California school system, or most probably in general, had been projects of the Masons, and
absolutely.
So the definition of like socialism or whatever doesn't seem to matter as much as the leadership of the groups as I only know to call them Masons, but so I think the earlier question was like about fairness or what have you. So I think that kind of brings up kind of a parallel between the way in which a farm animal, you know, doesn't really have any say in what kind of farm he lives, but in terms of what world a human lives, I think humans have a natural expectation to at least believe or want a desire to believe that they can change the quote unquote farm, if that's what it is.
Yeah, but if we only know one type of farm, Phil, you know, we're only going to come out of we're going to graduate from the farm only knowing that farm.
How about this?
Yeah.
You grow up. You're in a public. You get put in through a public school system that was created by Mason, who say that they're for freedom. The country you grew up in was founded by Masons based off of principles of freedom. Yet they set up something like the public school system, which is anti-capitalist freedom in the sense that people would normally believe it. Yet you convince the people of that same country that they're free and that the thing that is actually socialism is looked at as capitalistic and freedom, even though
it's an anachronism to start with.
Trained contradiction.
The comprehensive school system is.
We live in a world where, first, like the meanings of things, we've discussed this, you know, fairly recently. The meanings of things don't apply, you know, like Napoleon was saying yesterday is that, you know, words are just fashion, you know, at a certain level. And so you have to think about it. It's like, when the progressives brought in the school system in California, it was sold on, well, the poor and the people, you know, who can't afford it, they need education too. See? Because only the rich are currently educated at this point. We need to make sure that the poor get educated. And who's going to help out with that? Well, the Masons are going to make sure that happens, right? Because they want everybody to be free. Here's the thing about all of that type of stuff. All of this stuff is convoluted to a certain level to where each one of these issues, like, you know, you wanted to talk about freedom yesterday, and then you saw how that conversation went, because that's a 4-hour conversation. You know, I mean, I know we do a lot of these type of conversations here, and that's what this forum is for, but that's what you have to get to. It's like, those are things to where you'll have questions like the question Meesum was asking yesterday, and you have to have a discussion that literally plays itself out for 2 hours just to be able to break down questions that people have and foundation. So like the question that Phil asked about that, I thought Napoleon's answer was adequate. It's like you'd have to know you're on a farm in the first place, right? But the level of freedom that is it freedom? I guess to answer your question from another perspective, Phil, would be, is freedom?
Freedom.
A possible separation, like a possibility in the modern world?
The one I always refer back to, I've done it a number of times. There's a song
Do you know, I'm just going to tell you now, I think all the Rez is understanding, John.
There's a song by the Kinks, and it's called I Am Free. There's a song by Cream, it's called I Feel Free. Okay? One means I am free, I'm declaring I'm free, but the other one says I feel like I'm free. So, you know, which is it? Like I was saying with that lady I was talking to on that one fakeologist chat, Maria Laquita, she said, well, yeah, I feel free here in my country, wherever it was she lived in the Arab Emirates. She said, yeah, I feel free. And I said, I pointed that out to her. I said,
you're listening to another hour of Fakeologist Audio Chat on Fakeologist.com.
Club Fakeologist. So yeah.
Oh, you remember from what?
The words get so convoluted, it becomes almost impossible to understand things as they are versus what you might think of them or feel like it is. It's like we don't even have a common ground to discuss things without sane vocabularies and grammar, we're losing it.
I look at it another way, and I always have done. I've looked at the words as being like a boa constrictor. So the more you hear of the words, the less you get of that feeling. So they keep saying free, and as you keep hearing the word free, that's when you're breathing out. And then the more it tightens its grip, and that's when he introduces free. I don't think the word free, like you say, John, I don't think it was ever really discussed. You know, probably 60, 70 years ago.
Yes. So the first off, there's someone, you know, across the street down the way, there's an apartment building where they have one bedroom apartments. I'm currently moving out of a 3-bedroom house. Who has more freedom? Do I feel more free than that person who doesn't have as much space in their house as I do? What about the person who lives in the 5-bedroom house? Do they have more freedom than me?
Well, you're basically like, seem like to me like getting away from there being any concept any definable concept.
No. John's quantifying it the way it's quantified in reality. John, they have more freedom. Freedom than you, John. The people with the 5-bedroom, they have more freedom than you, pal.
There's some people. Napoleon, you reside alone, do you not?
I do. I reside alone, thank God.
Okay. Right, thank God. Myself, I would say I don't reside alone, thank God. There's some things Napoleon has the freedom to do, if that's the way somebody wants to look at it. Maybe he looks at it that way, that I don't have the freedom to do. But it's subjective, and that's a reality. That is something that is a reality I just laid out for you right there. It is a reality that Napoleon feels free in his situation, and yet I feel free in my situation.
Yeah,
right?
I think...
No, wait, don't. Let me finish. So the feeling of freedom is genuine. That is a genuine feeling, but is that really freedom? What is it? What is it at a certain point, you know? Is there someone who lives in a who lived in the Soviet Union at the height of Stalinism and they felt free? Maybe.
Yeah, this is a very tough question, but in my opinion also it depends on not necessarily only the feeling, but your options or what you are able to do with things that you want. Like, if you want to work and you work, can you work the hours that you want to work? Can you buy the things that you want to buy? Can you do the things that you want to do? If you want to amuse yourself.
Given the option, you wouldn't do either.
Sorry?
Given the option, you wouldn't work.
Yeah, probably not. Probably not. But, yeah, there's
see,
a lot
it's of things. Not, it's not an argumentative question, but it is room 101.
I would love to talk about this.
Discussing basic conspiracy. Because yeah, you cannot disregard like what John says there. What is freedom? What is classed as freedom? People don't know what freedom is.
This is
it
like,
means something different to everybody.
This is a very worthwhile tangent. Is would people pursue interests beyond their basic and immediate needs if they had a free world, quote unquote, like whatever? Just leaving aside, like taking if humans escape the farm. then would people still strive onward? And
yeah, definitely. I wanted to do stop motion animation in the 80s when I was a young child. I've come up with numerous little stories, made things in my head. If I had the option, I could have gone to all these different things. I'm brilliant at drawing, could do what I want. But what I mean is, I didn't have the option. But, you know, there was no courses. So if you take out the freedom thing, and that's basically what it is. University is freedom that they're offering you. Oh, there's a little taste of freedom. But the options you're given, the roads, that's all it is. It's funneling fucking talent, funneling and whatever it may be. It's bollocks, man. None of it's any good. Who's the most talented person ever? Ever. Not Da Vinci. He made weapons. Who's the most talented person?
You had the means and you had
Wayne Newton.
You lost. Go on. I'm glad someone answered. Wayne Newton, man.
So you had already the means to work on your stop motion projects at the time, and I'm saying, like, I think
no, I agree with you. Playing the gypsies, man, on caravan types.
But, like, would people still strive to produce extra grain that they would have throughout the winter seasons, or would they even go and strive to put some into the community pot for whoever later, or would they strive to make new innovations?
Yeah, you're applying a dynamic from the current situation you live in to something that you wouldn't actually know what that situation would call for if you would even apply those type of dynamics to that situation. Does that make sense?
Yes, totally. Feasible situation, you know, like, is there any logical connection between what we have now and an unfarmed world?
No.
I think people being prudent is natural.
Yeah, I do want to like say this as like a thought experiment that would make sense as a prudent example for what people in this community probably wonder about as well, is like, you know, could it work, the time spent doing research and you're really cutting the rug out under me on that one, John, by saying that there's like no way for me to say that if I were to work toward that, then still would I have any of the means today as I do today to do it, or what would I be able to bring with me into this kind of separated sense of self and
community? No. All John's saying is your dynamic there is coming from your current state of mind.
You
would have applied when the question would have been asked would have been totally different. That's all.
Yeah, exactly. And
hello.
Wait, can anybody hear me?
Yeah.
Hey, John. Sorry, it's Conkers, mate. I've just come in. I just wanted to see if you could hear me. That was all. But carry on.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I can hear you. So, yes.
Sorry, oh, F53, I do have a point to make. I was going to just about to say something.
Go ahead. You go ahead then. Be my guest.
I've almost forgotten what I was going to say now as well. So what I would say regarding that model is if you are to look at, you know, if you get rid of this current system and look at a society that does have these freedoms, I mean, could you imagine any other model than exchange for services, exchange for skills, things like this? You know, any other model would be kind of socialism. Like, even in a free and fair, you know, without getting too far into the definition, society, I could see there would have to be some level of a trade or barter system for services, skills, etc., if you see what I mean. I don't see any other way unless it was a socialist.
Well, everybody will agree that... I think everybody...
Hang on, Phil.
What?
Phil, play the game. It was asking John.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, because you know what Phil's like. Hang on, he's got a question. He's going to answer this, and I'll answer my little bit as well.
I'll make my point if you're just going to wobble.
I know, but John's limited because he has children waking up left, right, and center. He's the Pied Piper of Hamelin.
Well, yeah. Here's the thing. You're never going to... Once Pandora's box is opened, it's opened. There's nothing you can do about it. You can't go back to an old way of life. It's very hard to, even if you want to. Even if, you know, my good friend Chris Kendall, I'm sure, you know, he has the means, or anybody else who's single without a family, has the means to be able to go back into nature at some point, to a certain extent. But... Yeah. Not in the way that it used to be, because those days are gone. You're not going to be able to go live out in the woods, because you're going to have a forest ranger come up and bug you about what you're doing. You're going to have to pay to do something. You're going to have to go into a city to get food at some point. There's not always food available unless you want to, you know, try to live off dandelion root or, you know, whatever.
I would argue to a point, and I get exactly what you're saying, that side of it has gone. But with this modern, what would we call it, like we had the revolution, yeah, so you had the Industrial Revolution, and now we're in this other revolution. And it seems, in a sense, it's never been easier to break away from the system, if you wanted to. But the fact is, it's so convenient, most people won't. You think most of the things are there. I mean, just with the internet alone, you could research basically anything you needed to do. I think the model for schooling, if you have children, that one's dead and buried. You know, that was an industrial model, and I don't think they care so much. They're slowly slashing.
That's the third matrix.
You know, so they're quite keen on homeschooling. I think they're not bothered. It's a pointless expenditure now because...
I agree.
Because of AI and things like this.
Actually, yeah, we talked about this like 3 years ago. I remember Marcus Allen was talking about this because his wife's a teacher, and he actually pointed that out. I'd never heard that angle before. He said that. He said, yeah, I think the elite want us to homeschool. He's all because... They're not going to want you to leave your house anyways. You could probably just take courses online. And your children.
Exactly. Yeah. Like you guys talk about, you know, I've heard you chat about before, you know, that is kind of like with these robot, you know, the robot doctors. There was actually a show in Britain, Napoleon might be able to see it, Channel 4, and it's all about a robot doctor. Have you seen this? And it's a psychiatrist, it's a doctor.
I've heard people talking about it, and it's it's not Michael Batty, but it still makes you prick up your ears.
Well, how about this though? Before we get too far off topic, I mean, these are interesting discussions and you know, all that type of stuff. But how about this? One thing I always try to get back to, and I don't do this to confuse. I do this just so people can think about it, like. Mr. Blank's there, would the old rugged individual man even know what freedom is if it wasn't pointed out to him that he had freedom? Or would he just be living without the concept, without the analytical type mind of having to have the word for what already existed? And it isn't until somebody comes along with a concept of something. You know,
John, who are the most important people in every religion going? The most important people in every religion, any science, anything going, the people that name things. Once you name something, that makes it quantifiable. They're the most important. They're the ones.
A lot of the books that we talk about, like take, for instance, one Chris and I bring up often, the Technological Society. It isn't like Jacques Ellul is pointing out anything I don't already know.
No.
Anybody can read that book. I'm not that smart. It's just anybody could read that book and read what he was saying and go, oh yeah, I already knew all this.
Yeah. You find that with probably 80% of all philosophy books.
I'm on 33%, lads. 33% with me.
One point I'd like to make, though, on what were you just talking about, John?
I was saying, so the war, you know, there are things that
free,
exist.
Sorry,
you know, freedom, yeah. Phil. Phil gets on about the words and all that type of stuff, and
yep.
So
what I'd just like to chime in there with is freedom. As you were sort of saying, I think it's a term that knows no bounds, as in mm-hmm. it's a fluffy, it seems like a modern concept, like you say, it's sort of an invention, it's sort of something that could have been a fairly modern term that's been manipulated.
One day we will achieve it.
Like love, just I think freedom. It's a love, like, because freedom, I mean, do I have the freedom, where does it end? To not breathe? To fly? Do you see what I mean?
Well, I don't want to, like, try to define it all, but just leaving it with going with your friends and maybe the you know, Friday is the end of the week and feel good on Friday, and that's Frigg's day. Frigg, the guy, the...
Exactly where it comes from, man. Frigg
and friendship, I think that those are good starting points prayer. For anyone researching.
Frigg prayer, yeah. We pointed that out on that freedom episode, yeah.
So...
For the slaves. You have to give the slaves a weekend over there, otherwise they don't know the slaves.
So the point Conker's made it about today having so many tools available and that leading to people doing homeschooling as well as people wanting to trade, and what I'm saying about friendship as a foundational element for society, regardless of how it's structured, that these tools today do offer many of the means necessary for whatever you want to call it, people to trade, people to bond, and those are what would lead toward the bedrock wherever humanity took itself to flourish or however people wanted to try anything different.
Do you know what the funny thing is about is offering freedom to this society now is the way they've been indoctrinated, we'd end up with the same society we've got anyway.
It's because they're at the point that they can be allowed to be free because they are, you know, I think they've got it nailed now. People are within those sort of bounds.
It's the world.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, God, yeah. Exactly. We're there. We're there. Yeah, do not mistake.
They can be allowed to be free range. You know, we can send them out the battery and we can let them be a bit free range, let them wander a bit because they're always...
Do you know, I think the movie Platoon proved that. You watch Platoon, and you got over that. Fucking bit crazy, that film.
I had a dude come over to my house the other day to purchase some records from me, and the younger guy, who's 28 years old, and he's you know, he asked me, oh, where are you moving to? And I said, well, I'm moving to Arizona. He's all, I heard they're building this smart city in Arizona. So it's pretty cool. It's like a city that's going to be built by Microsoft, right? And I said to him, well, you don't think there's anything weird about that? And he's like, well, yeah, I guess it's kind of weird, yeah. I'm like, yeah, I think it's really creepy, you know, that there's those type of things. I'm all, that's just going to be like the normal thing now. He's like, yeah, I guess, like, you know, I'm all. So if I hadn't offered up some sort of resistance to what he was saying, he probably would have gotten into a conversation with somebody talking about how great and wonderful it would be to live in a smart city. So, you know, the last, 20 pages of Brave New World where the, you know...
Isn't it funny how quickly we can digest diatribes? We can go on our own little diatribe, and blah, 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 and blah, 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 and blah, 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 and before you know it, you're at it. You know, you've delivered an entire, like, political system to someone, and it's only just something, the last two pages, something. Yeah, but it makes that much of an impression.
Yeah, he does.
They're very artistic, these writers.
They are. And he knows exactly how that's going to work because that in that last part of the book, when this John the Savage is trying to free all of the Epsilons or whatever, and they're scared, and he's like, you guys are free, you can go. And the Grand Mustafa or whatever that guy's name is, he's like, come on, man. These people, they have no concept of freedom. They don't even know what you're talking about, right? He's like, you know, this is an arcane idea, the type of thing you're trying to show them, you know?
Well, he's not giving them their freedom. He's giving them his freedom.
Oh, he's putting an extension on Plato's cave.
That's an interesting concept there, though, because you just went full circle with what we originally started talking about. You see,
yeah, you're right.
The Freemasons gave us their freedom.
Yeah.
The okay, so okay. So we live out in a world where whatever level of freedom is for a particular time period, that's what's acceptable and that's what's cool. And as we get less quote-unquote freedom, we actually get more freedom because as the real quote-unquote freedom is diminished, the ideas about what freedom is change and actually shorten the space between what real freedom would be as opposed to what the idea of freedom is. So if your idea of freedom is being able to live in a bathroom-sized house and all you do is play with your smartphone, you're going to be free to do that. And you're never going to ever think about having to go see, you know, the Grand Canyon or, you know, our friends across the pond, the Isle of Wight. You're not going to ever want to go outside anyways.
This is your getting out. This is what you're saying is your freedom to be able to go to that place or to do those things and not do that. Like, this is like the Isaiah Berlin negative versus positive liberty.
No. Because it's not mine. It's the things that at one time people were free to do and that they wanted to do. Or someone like myself, yes, I would like to go to the Grand Canyon, or I would like to go see the Isle of Wight. But there is a time period where those type of things were accepted as things you would do in a free society. So whether it's my personal desire to want to go to those things has nothing to do with the level of freedom to be able to even have the concept of even going there, and two, to be able to go do it at all. So in a future time period, you may not be able to go to the Isle of Wight, but you won't want to go there anyways.
Well, what I'm saying is that you're using a freedom to definition there, whereas I'm saying a freedom from definition by invoking Isaiah Berlin. So if I'm saying that if you would go and do those things and that would be your good life, then that's great for you. And what somebody in a familiar world that I would hope to live with might want for himself and me for myself similarly, and live together in a friendly community where we're not obliged to do the things that we don't want to, whether it's something good in anyone else's mind or something bad. Like, we're defining these things ourselves. That's in my mind a major component of freedom.
That sounded kind of gay.
Well, yeah, I've got a question, Phil. Is everybody ready for this? Right.
Yeah, that's getting the phoning because I got one as well.
Oh, sorry, mate. Sorry about that. Go on, you carry on.
You go first, mate. It's fine.
Mine's dead simple. The idea of strong and weak attached to patriarch and matriarch, right? I don't think people in the natural world or going back 200-300 years would have ideally classed their father as being strong and their mother as being weak, because obviously there was different people take over different jobs. It was always the cunning, you know, the different names of tribes and stuff like that, and the different attributes that people had. So it was the, you know, strong, bear, blah, blah, blah. Even women had these names as well. The idea of a fella being strong and a woman being weak is definitely incorporated into what was being pushed on us. And as you know, women are a lot stronger than us. Yeah, you know,
I think strong in their own ways. I think that's the other thing. You've got to, it's in the both, you know, we're equal, aren't we?
And that, yeah, I'm only going off my mum there, but what I mean is there is,
very,
you know,
emotionally very strong, emotionally very strong. And then,
but it's very easy to split. That's what I mean. To split that, I make that black and white option. Yeah. You know, men are strong and women are weak. And I think that is, even though it's so subtle, it has worked.
Yeah.
Anyway, Conkers, sorry.
That's all right, mate.
Sorry, mate.
What? No, that's all right. No, yeah, good point. But I was just going to make the point, just while I remember it, I will say, back to what John and Delete the Elite were chatting about.
Real quick, I just want to say hi to Rochelle and fuck Katy Perry.
Oh, Rochelle, fuck Katy Perry.
Hi, Rochelle. Now, with this freedom thing, I would say
fuck Katy Perry.
What will happen is freedom of movement will be restricted. in the future, but that will be offset by more freedom in the virtual world. You know, this VR thing, it is going to be bigger and bigger, and it, like, you know, it is going to be a case of most people will get their experiences through their devices. So you will be able to visit these places, but just not in the real world. You'll be able to, I mean, virtual reality could quite easily get to the level where you could pretty much visit anywhere and do anything. You know, so you do have a lot of freedom, but with the device. But movement around the world, like I say, with smart cars and all of this, that will be greatly restricted. So it's all got to be offset, hasn't it? If you take something away, you've got to give something back. And they, it also plays into the grand scheme as well. Do you see what I'm saying?
They paved the way with the moon landing, so yeah, anything else is obviously possible.
I agree with that.
Ready Player One.
Well, yeah, exactly. Here we go into the world where the full blown religion of scientism, where the physical world is not, you know, it's like I was saying, when it comes to warfare, the mind is the battlefield. That's true. But that does, and the mind is the most important thing when it comes to, you know, programming and all that type of stuff. But the mind is not the full realm of experience. There is absolutely no way that you can learn about, that you could, and scientists will say this, these crazy nutballs who call themselves scientists really believe, or they're just, you know, fake propagandists, either one. I think there's both, personally. But they really believe that there's no difference than experiencing the Grand Canyon virtually and experiencing it in real life. There is no difference between having sex with the robot and having sex with a woman, if you're a man.
I love that you're making this point, John, because it's exactly, like, to hold this consistent would mean that the programming is not the thing that's, you know, you're eliciting, or it's not the experience, like, the world that... Like, I was going to talk about, obviously, like, the difference between virtual freedom and freedom in the material world, but they're different. They're really different. I agree with you.
There is no experience that you can have in the virtual world that could possibly even touch the real experience. Now, here's the thing, though. You can change the nature and the perception of the real world so that the thing that happens in the virtual world can become more preferable, okay? But you have to be able to program people into believing that. It wouldn't be possible for, you know, a natural man, a caveman, or a natural woman to think that doing something on the computer was better than doing it in real life. You have to get to a point to where we are at today, to where you have generation of generation of generation to actually prefer, you know, just something as simple as digital media over a phonographic record. Okay. Whatever, you could take that in a million different things. Oh, phonographic records are hard to store. I don't use that. That's old school, or, you know, whatever. So, just whatever it may be. In the future, there may be even something, and they've talked about this, I'm not, I don't know if this will come to pass, but what if they just figured out all of the reactions that your brain gets to food, and that those responses, you know, whatever they do to your organs and your digestive system, if they could manufacture in the virtual world just to make you think that you ate food, then you would have to program a generation of people to actually believe that virtual food is better than real food, and that you just hook yourself up into a computer, or, you know, do whatever it is you do in the future, and you just have your brain stimulated to believe that you're full.
I'm starting to accept, I understand a lot better how this whole conspiracy or the fake world makes sense in a way now, in this context, that it's moving that direction. I just, maybe because I still eat meat, I'm still, so you go back to the mushrooms.
Meat's good. So.
Yeah, well, in this generation, but won't not for long, and as long as the programming follows through. But I guess in the sense we were talking about before about real freedom or you know the freedom in the world that we see today versus the one that this is being we're getting set up for.
Yeah, but the programming's an awful lot shorter, and that's what John's saying. The programming we've been hit with now is so short, it's like bang, bang, bang. Look, we've just come off the back of the First World War and the Second World War. Now when computers have been introduced, we've been quantified, we're being pushed into this simulation theory, stroke, reality. We've got artificial flavourings, we've got artificial... tanks that you lie in, you leave your body, we've got artificial drugs. We're literally, what's going on now is now you're being offered the choice. Stay indoors, go outside, you go outside. No, ain't out there. What's out there? War. What else is out there? Policemen can shoot you.
This is what I'm saying.
Sorry, John.
I said, what's out there, too, is a bunch of people trying to sexually harass you all day long as well.
I thought you were saying that there's real grass outside. That's what I heard at first. And that's what I mean, is that there's real grass outside. There's real trees, and there's people. And this is great. I really love this.
Chris will tell you you can't go to half them places you meant to. You meant you stick to the path. It's like American Wealth in London. Stick to the path. You know what I mean? Bollocks. You're not free. What is free? We're back to that question. Bollocks again. What is freedom?
Well, I was saying it's about community in a sense, because if I go out into the grass field, I want to like chill with my buddies, and this is a simulation of that. So I just kind of think that in understanding how all these systems...
Well, you actually answered the question, because you said, what is freedom? And you said being able to care. And freedom is being able to care for people who are not being cared for. That is what freedom is. Exactly what it is. Nothing more, nothing. When someone needs something, you're allowed to give it to them.
I was talking about community. I think that
freedom, ultimately.
Sorry, Conkers.
No, I was just saying it's probably a relative term, isn't it? Ultimately, freedom. It can only ever be relative to the individual.
Yeah.
I agree with that. And I totally agree with that. What I was saying is that like we, I think, have an inclination to want to be with our own community, the people who we identify with. And I think that the major theme of why people talk about freedom in a sense of loss here is because...
Wait, that is strange.
Is that we're losing our own communities in favor of the one that's being masonically built for us, that community instead.
Well, yeah, there's rules and regulations to every fucking inhabitants, you know what I mean?
But delete the elite. Can I ask you, though? But I would say, and I'm in the same boat, but I would put it to you that you know all of this stuff and you know what's going on. But I would say you are pretty much still living within the system, and you probably still will. Although you could if it came down to it. But you know what I mean? I could. I still do. But I could if I wanted to. If it came down to it, I could break away from it and sacrifice a few things. But I probably won't, which is... I don't know. I may, but in the not, you know, I will avoid particulars of the system as much as possible. But in a general day-to-day way of thinking, and a mortgage, I don't know. You know what I'm saying? It's it's a strange one. As much as you know.
Don't try and travel in your head. You've no idea what's going to go on in the future. Live for today. Try and just be there for the next couple of weeks, unless you've got children or anything like that, and obviously provide for them. But if you're a single person now, you've no idea what's going to happen in the future. The game is wide open. It really is. Oh, I'm going to say single. I mean, if you've only got yourself to care for.
Yeah, I only have myself to care for, and maybe I could leave the system like Conkers is saying. I have an apartment. I could sell the apartment and not pay the mortgage. I could try to find out how to, I don't even know, run a farm or something.
And, you know we're live, don't we?
Just do all that, but then you would have to give up so much that you've been, indoctrinated to like and to, and in a sense, I'm fairly comfortable. See, fairly comfortable farm animals.
Just what he said right there. He just said give up. Okay.
Well, he didn't say take on something else because he didn't have another idea of something else to take on.
He said, give up. He said, you would have to give up so much else in order to get freedom. Okay. So
yeah. But there's nothing else to take that he has in mind.
Think about that. Just the way in just the way that it came out naturally for him. I'm not putting delete the elite down. I'm just pointing it out. It's you have in order to be free, you have to give something up. It's like you're not unshackling the chains.
Yeah.
You actually feel that in order to obtain this alleged freedom that lies out there in the woods eating, you know, twigs and berries with Alan Watt somewhere, that you will actually obtain freedom, right?
Yeah.
But yet we still say, oh well, I'd have to give this up. It's like, oh,
yeah. Well. I was quoting Conkers, but I also agree with him because I would feel the same as the way he expressed it when he used the word "give up."
Do you know what's funny? Freedom's represented as being out on the excursion, and then there's a battle going on, and you join it. So, you know, if you want to be free, you have to flee. That's how every fucking Star Wars film starts. There's some dick in a desert land, and then he joins the rebellion. Now, that's being pumped into kids' faces. So, you know, the idea of what is freedom?
You can be free. That's what I think. I think some people overcomplicate it. It's like, if I wanted to, I could. I feel fairly free still. Although all of this is going on, I mean, that one...
You don't have to join up, do you?
You know, as general as it can be, the more you know, like, knowledge... Is there a phrase, knowledge is not just power, but, you know, it is a bit of freedom, isn't it? Because you have the intellectual freedom to sort of... To know there are options.
Yeah, it's understanding. Understanding is... There's no such thing as, you know, being intelligent. It's understanding. Everything's understanding.
Yeah. Only 1% of the planet.
If you really wanted to, in this day and age, I think you could be fairly out of this system. You would deal with it. I mean, it's there, isn't it? You know, but I don't know. I don't think it's...
Yeah, but we're not going to walk around in a world where we're saying we're free. Because like you say there, the being free, you would still have to hide away from things. So even though it's called free, it's not actually free.
Yeah.
You know, it's escapism from the system that is there and that is now classed as being free. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. It feels too airy-fairy now. At the
Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of like...
Can I just add something, though, and say, Conkers, can I just tell you that one of my best friends, he had a business, a guy that ran a business, a small business, and he actually did this that you're talking about. He moved to the southern parts of Sweden and opened up a farm because he sold his business probably for a couple of $1 million or whatever. And he actually did this thing. And I've asked him because he comes to Stockholm every now and then to give me a call if he comes back to Stockholm because I want to know who this guy is and how he did it and why and all this reasoning. Because he actually did the whole thing. He went all in.
Grid.
Yeah, he went off the grid.
Yeah,
but,
you know, it takes
money.
It's doable, and it doesn't even.
Yeah. I'm sorry, I'm gonna be a really, really, really rude person now, but we've had Rochello in for at least 9 minutes. It'd like be nice to hear Rochello say hello.
She is muted.
I'm just being a gentleman. You don't usually get that.
Yeah, I'm just listening to you guys. I'm driving home from slave time. You just let me go, you know.
And you still hear the crack of the whip.
5 days a week. It's not that bad.
Oh, no Saturday or Sunday?
Yeah, yeah.
Look at that. That's cool.
Yeah, normal schedule, I guess. So Friday is like I call it the American holiday. Everybody's happy and jovial and like, oh, yeah, what are you doing this weekend? Like, it doesn't come around next weekend.
Yeah, it's the like a wipe. Everybody gets rewiped. Thursday. What are you doing tomorrow?
It's just an illusion.
Any Christmas parties? No Christmas parties.
Oh, did we have a Christmas party?
Yeah.
Yeah, we had a little get together last week for the company or whatever.
Who did you hit? Did you punch anyone?
Did I punch anyone? No, I like to use my feet, so I kicked a couple people in the face, so yeah.
Cool.
No, I always joke that, you know, they. They wouldn't let us go home after 5 days if work didn't start deteriorating after 40 hours. So it's kind of like, it's not really for our benefit, it's more for theirs. You know what I'm saying?
They gotta get the giggles, get the kicks. You know, they gotta get the kicks somewhere. These are the upper class, the rulers. Not. These people aren't, but, you know, we have this pecking system. You know? Oh, let's do it to them.
Yeah, I mean, here, mandatory overtime is not illegal. Like, if they told you that you had to work 24 hours a day, they could fire you if you didn't do that. So, you know, I think that they're just working until you frickin' drop, basically, but it's not to their benefit, so yeah. But anyways, I'm just listening to y'all. What were you guys talking about?
Katy Perry.
Yeah, that's my favorite. One of my favorite characters. You know, I had a video that I've posted up twice, and I'm suspended from YouTube now because I'm a bad kid. I've always been a bad kid my entire life. I've had authority issues, I guess, and it's even transpired into my online persona, I guess. My video that got taken down on October 1st, it's about Ellen DeGeneres. I edited it and reposted it. Because I got taken down because they said that I was attacking them or something. It was for attack. So I wrote that this is not an attack. And I muted the word attack in there. And I reposted it. And they took it down within a couple hours, like before I woke up in the morning. They had already taken the video down. So I started a Vimeo channel because homie don't play that. I mean, you know, basically fuck YouTube and fuck Katy Perry straight up.
Have you got a new channel?
Excuse me?
Have you got a new channel? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I started a Vimeo page, and then...
Vimeo's mint. I get that bell. I didn't think anyone knew.
What'd you say?
I didn't think anyone knew about Vimeo, right? Give me the link. Have you got the link?
I'm almost home here in a couple minutes. I'll put the link in the chat. But it's just that video. All I have up right now is the video that YouTube just will not let me post up there for some reason. I guess I am just so harsh to these Pulse victims, and they are still grieving, and I'm just a fucking bitch, I guess. So,
fucking horrible, you are.
I'm absolutely
horrible.
Horrible, but I'm loving it.
You're not even a feminist. What's up with you?
I know. That's probably why they took my video down, because I'm not, like, praising Ellen DeGeneres for, like, being a stand-up guy or girl or whatever it is. I'm actually, John was reminding me, I love that he kind of brings a back blast from the past. John was reminding me about Kay Ham and I's little chat over 9/11, and I actually went back and re-listened to those. And my audio is horrible. I'm really scared to post that link in there, but Kayham is really freaking hilarious and funny, and of course her audio is way better than mine. She's got a lot more to say, and she's really good at doing.
I love your chats. I really do. I love your chats on all the things that you do.
Oh God, I love talking with Kayham and stuff. Yeah. So basically, I realized that in the I'll have to post it. The the Tale of the Two Towers talk that we did. She had I had said that I was going to put it in video form, and I think I'm going to do that. I'm going to get down to that tonight and put that on my Vimeo page. So hopefully I can get that done this weekend. But it's going to be really funny. And I don't even need to commentate. It's just because of the things that these people say. That's my favorite thing, is watching the victims and survivors of these mass spectacles. And just listening to what they say is just absolutely hilarious. Don't you guys agree?
I do like the... you remember the Pulse guy who had the American, like, the American hat on, like the little trilby hat, and the American shorts.
Oh God, the big fat gay guy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure, I think there's a Lego model out there of him now.
You know, don't be surprised, I don't know if I've said this before, but you know, everybody knows, and there's nothing, I don't have anything against gay guys, but I mean, it's one of those things, they like to sing and act and dance. And perform, like, be performers. So, you know, we see an over, I think it's a, I think that the ratio of the numbers of, like, gay guys that we see who are clearly like, okay, this guy's a little fruity. There's a lot of these people who are, like, survivors and witnesses and stuff like that. And I simply think it's just because they're acting and they're in their field. So, you know.
It always reminds me of, you know, you get the Christmas movies. and you get like the Cockneys in the, Oliver Twist and, you know, Scrooge. And, you know, they're all larger than life. That's what it's like to take them this evening. You know, they say, oh, all right, Governor. You know, they stick out their arms, you know, when they stood there. Like when George Bush used to stand there with his hands, you know, really spread out. You know, he's like he's literally playing a part. And they always remind me of like these like jazz hands kind of people. It's almost like whatever tragedy happened when he was putting on a play.
Yeah. I guess to say what you're saying, I guess the way I describe it is it's kind of like it reminds me of like a different form of like a really bad Hispanic soap opera. You know what I mean? Like how they they play.
Yeah.
Real good.
Yeah, I've seen a couple of them. Yes, yeah,
but not that, that bad, but just as bad in a different way. So,
yeah, small cells. Yeah, no, I'm with you there. But we see that with the space stuff as well.
Oh yeah. So it's a different genre, but we just can't get our finger on it. Can we name that? I mean, you guys come up with all kinds of different names and stuff. Fakeologist, Fakepedia.
That's not me, darling. That's not me. I don't matter. I'm not part of that crew. That's Gaia and Mizzen and Fakeologist. I back out of that. You do not want my input.
Oh, okay, noted. I will write that down.
Yes, I tell fibs.
Por qué? Dime por qué, mi hermana. Dime por qué.
Exactly. Perfect. You're hired, by the way. You're fucking hired. Doing my,
I could be, you know what's funny is, too, because, you know, of course, growing up out here, there's people that I've met, you know, when I used to live in L.A., and, you know, they'd have, like, commercials or, you know, something. I've never, you know, met or hung out with anybody. Well, actually, I have one person, but I've never really met or talked to anybody who was like a actor, but then the people who would actually be actors, you're like, these are the people that are actors? And then you wonder, you know, you're like, this person gets jobs? Are you kidding me? And I can't get a job as an actor? I know I could be a better actor than this person.
Like you've met them, like you talk to them, or like you're like through your grocery store checker or something like that. How deep do you know these people?
No, just in a past life, in a 20 years ago when I used to live in Los Angeles. Actually, you might think this is funny, Rochelle. You know the movie Menace to Society?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Okay, you know Kane?
Okay.
The main character Kane, I hung out with that guy.
Really? What, did you smoke a bunch of weed or something? What are you doing, John?
No, he's actually, I'm not kidding. He is actually a born again Christian.
No, I believe you. I know.
Yeah, he's a born again Christian. He is totally straight. Doesn't smoke weed or anything or any. Even though he plays that character in that movie, it was funny. He was sitting in a restaurant.
Right, exactly. Selling out the black community. Anyway, go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, you know, that's an interesting thing because a lot of those movies, like whether it's Boys in the Hood or Menace to Society, those people who are involved in those projects, I don't know if the directors, you know, are like this, but the people who are involved with those projects, they actually think that, like, you know, by these movies coming out that it's like saying, you know, oh, this is bad. It's, they don't see the glamorization in it.
No! How bad is it? No!
By having every single movie depict a certain thing, they don't see how that's glamorizing it. Oh, okay, that makes sense.
Yes, literally, there's the fashion field. That's trend. You say something is something twice, there you go, that's it. So that's the ghetto trended.
Yeah.
Two gangster films, boom, you're in. Why? Yeah. Why don't people understand?
So how did you end up hanging out with Mr. Kane, Mr. Adams?
He was in a restaurant one time, my friend's walking past him, and he's like, hey, you're Kane. I'm like, dude, I was like, oh, I was all embarrassed because I...
Hello?
I can hear you, Rochelle.
Cuts out, John.
Through you.
Hello? Hello?
I just have the story.
Comes right in a while.
Hello?
Hello?
Oh.
Can you hear me?
Hello? Hello, I'm from Manchester.
Oi, mate. Alright.
I'm from Manchester. I was at the bombing.
The Manchester bombing.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. I was just saying we were at a restaurant. We saw that guy sitting there. My friend said, hey, you're Kane from Menace Society. He said, yeah, you guys want to sit down? So we just sat down with him, hung out with him.
Aw, he's lonely. I'm just kidding.
Yeah. That's cool, man.
That was it. I mean, nothing else past that, but yeah, it was just... We didn't have smartphones back then, so I couldn't take a selfie with him.
Days, man. No cameras about. I met so many people. I've snugged Denise Van Outen on a crossing. I got my first glass of champagne from Clayton Blackmore. I've punched a few people. I'm not going to tell you who they are. Who were pretty famous. Played football with Oasis. I remember waking up on top of a crane. A few things. I went to a girl's house one night and she lived in her house, which was like Hobbit, you know, Hobbitsville or Middle Earth, wherever it was. She lived actually in the mountain. Yeah, but I've had some funny things. If I ever did have a camera phone in them days, wicked. But no, that's all. Literally, my past is like Lord of the Rings.
Do you rather enjoy punching people, or is that kind of an English thing?
Curious. No, my leg shakes. You know, when your leg shakes, so you have to punch people. But you look at your leg and then you punch them quick. That's all it is. It's my leg's fault.
I'll be right back, y'all.
Evening, Mahatma. How we doing?
Hi, mate. How's it going?
I'm all right, Paul. I'm all right. I've got the fire in front of me. I've got one bar going, but I need to fire a little bit more closer to myself. I've got the heat. Got the heat rising. If I do have to nip to the toilet, I'll leave this room. It does get a bit hairy, but yeah, Britain's not too bad at the moment.
From down south, it was fucking freezing there. It's freezing here too.
Like, yeah, but
I thought it'd be a couple of degrees warmer down there, but no.
Yeah, well, they got the wind on it. It's skinny, Britain. It gets a little bit skinny down there. Especially Wales. Wales box a lot of the wind for us.
And the rain.
Yes. True. Although, you know, what does it produce? It produces big Welshmen.
Especially down south.
Yucky there.
Copper's fucking huge.
Oh, some of the legs on the lads. I used to laugh. So you can't pick a fight with him. You've seen the legs on him. It might be one kicking you down. No chance. But it's the same near me in Manchester. You know, we have lots of islands, but not villages, but, you know, towns, this, that, and the other. And everyone, the lads, has got big legs. I always say that, you know, you think you've got little gangsters in Manchester. You think they're, you know, the rough and ready. Or like, you know, like bodybuilding lads who, you know, have done a few weights. It's like, no, go and have a look at these lads who live in the countryside where they've got legs, you know, like trunks. Anyway, but that just, you know, I love watching boxing. And obviously, if you know boxing, you know, you need big legs.
You think to the theory that Mike Tyson's really a girl?
No, but I tell you what, he's got the right fucking, let's get this right. He's got the right neck length and arm length. And the voice. So there's been an interruption in some sort of hormone thing there. But, or maybe what it was is he increased it during puberty. I don't know. But either way, he's fucking good.
Got
good
the right voice.
Yeah. You know, you can argue the point two and four, you know. And have we got any kids? Any Mike Tyson kids running about? Anyone know? Mike Tyson, got any children? Yeah, so, you know, you the point there. But, yeah, definitely hormone imbalance. Only for the length of the neck, to be honest with you. You can tell that.
A lot of people of African descent are built like that if they're muscular.
I've seen some Chinese lads and some Indian lads, bodybuilders, who were similar to that, you know, smaller arms and smaller neck. But that's what I mean. What does that mean? Does that mean you're a tranny? But all I was saying there is, you know, has he got any kids knocking around? I don't know if he has or not, so I'll just put it out there. But I still love watching him.
Been doing martial arts like 4 decades or whatever, and I've known some fucking, you wouldn't get near him, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I fight like Mike Tyson, if you give him loads of rides.
Monsters. They're monsters. Just mental about it.
But monsters.
Did you want to, Mama? You went out then. I can't hear you. Don't come, because freedom.
Can you hear me now?
Hi, John.
Can you hear me now?
Hi, John.
I can hear everyone now. It might have been me. Sorry.
Right. Cool.
I have kind of a little bit of stuff that I wrote up that I wanted to say.
You're listening to another hour of Fakeologist Audio Chat on Fakeologist.com.
Continuing off where we're coming from, if I could go with that. So I think that while we in the Western world, or even the Eastern world too, rocket towards transcendence, as Dalit mentioned, that in the south of Sweden, an interesting man had just started an intentional community among a long list of them. To do that takes resources, like everything does. And in terms of space, 1% of the planet is city space. And mud, dirt, bamboo are great building materials. And in terms of our moon key communications tools like this, electronics are getting cheaper and cheaper with scaled-up manufacturing plants, which
also... We don't need electronics.
Yeah, to go run into this and eat berries off the plants. But, you know, we need a lot of other tools, too, which are getting...
We don't need electronics. No one on this planet needs electronics. Think about it.
Okay. But don't need them. Hold on, let me finish the point. All right, so these tools are getting cheaper, but this seems like, to me, compatible as well as not with the guided progress and in terms of shirking one set of rules for another. For example, we're available, for example, with, say, for medical tools and research, as what some would want to do for that. And I can see how you might call that a longing for a lost or even never had community. And with, I would guess that with respect to sacrifice, even the Masons, or probably 99% of them, lament that loss or long for their own familiar communal world.
Like, you remember the end of The Wizard of Oz when he didn't know magic and it was just a dickhead behind the curtain, right? That's science. That's the Masons. Same as the Matrix. You know, it's all electric. It's all boom, boom, boom. This is a narrative. You know, transhumanism, John talked about earlier. That's what they're pushing. It's not going to work. That's not going to solve the problems. All it is going to a doctor's. You know, they're going to treat what you've done. They're not going to cure it. That's all it is, transhumanism. Basically, it's an avenue to invent the next narrative of what we're going to do. Base. Don't fall for it, Phil. Come on.
These people, many from all sorts of angles, wanting. I mean, of course, anything would, but I guess...
We could still be in the same state we're in with diesel power. You don't even need to introduce electric. We could have got into this state then. So don't incorporate. We were in this state then. People were still being filled with steam presses and newspapers and, you know, that's not the question. Freedom is not the question.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
The narrative is the question. What we're being guided to. There's a guy who comes on here named SMJ who speaks fucking gospel. No one listens to what he's saying. Spend a minute.
How about this real quick, because I got to go because my son's up. But we could have existed on the gold standard for 1,000 years. But and people who are libertarians pine for the gold standard, right? And if they had wanted to keep that part of the system, they could. They could have maintained it. But it's not part of the system for it to go on any further than it needed to. So you can come up with all the technological advances. You can make smartphones fucking do, you know, grow legs and start doing backflips. And it's not, it's only going to get as better as it's allowed to get with whatever the technology is. There are things out there, as Chris has pointed out many times on Hoaxbusters, there are things out there pertaining to automobiles that make automobiles more efficient and
yes, yeah,
and make them more ecologically friendly on top of it. But they don't go that route on purpose. They purposely don't go that way because it is too efficient, okay? So whatever it is, even in this current state, there may be some perks that come along with it. Obviously, I like having discovered the Discord chat and being able to talk to everybody.
You're a liar.
But the smartphone is part of a larger thing. Prepping me for my eventual brain chip, which I won't be taking, but. Most people who have the smartphone will eventually take the brain chip at some point or pass it on to their children that's what they need to do, you see.
Do you not think that interface came with the consultation? You know that person where you go on, that actual moment where you actually ask someone else about your situation. You know, when you consult someone, and then all that was is that became easier to do via online, and then that became easier to consult some your health yourself, but now you know the gap is being bridged, but we're choosing it ourselves.
Here's the other thing, real quick. See, here's the other. It's not only me. See, I'm going and looking for other people in other parts of the world to talk to on a Discord, not only because I'm finding more, relation wise, it's easier to relate to certain people outside of my general area, but this technology has also made people in my family, not my immediate family, but my my brothers, my sisters, all that type of stuff, this technology has contributed to those people becoming less relatable as human beings themselves. So I didn't have a smartphone until, 3 years ago? I didn't even have text messaging until 3 years ago. Everybody told me, everybody in my family, just get text messaging. It's going to make it so much easier. Just get this, just get that. Guess what? Nobody text messages me, ever.
Me too.
Nobody ever text messages me. And they all said, it's going to be so great. It's going to be so wonderful. We're going to be able to keep in contact so much easier. Guess what? No one text messages me, ever. Because they don't even want to keep in contact at all.
Oh, I don't know, John. Are you sure it's the right number? I mean, you know.
Yes. It's actually, the real phone number starts with 1-800.
Do you think that it's possible, John, for you...
Is that 1-800 guitar, man?
You to act out the free world that you like, and then Chris to him, similarly find those amongst him... his audience that also want what he describes, but it would kind of contrast with conflict with the rulers of today, wouldn't it? You can only fight against it but so much. Like, well, Chris hasn't gone off and lived in any of these new ventures himself, at least, like, and you did adopt these technologies, but... Do you
I tell you what, Chris has done an awful lot with my brain, so thank you. Big shout out to Chris Kendall. He did an awful lot for me.
Just like
the thing of it is, at a certain point, even what Conkers and Delete the Elite were saying, you should have no desire to ditch humanity altogether. You should have a desire to, even though people don't listen to me and my family about what I tell them about health or any other subject, whatever it may be, the desire is still there in me for them to know. I have at no point does it ever come where I say to myself, you know what, I'm done with these people in regards to that. if they come around eventually, then, you know, F them. Too bad. No, if one of them ever came to me and said, hey, you know, I'd really love to hear what you had to say about this because I finally realized you were right about that, I would welcome them with open arms. I wouldn't go say, well, too late. I'm off the grid now. I'm going into the woods.
Then what kind of middle ground do you see with those amongst the audience in this realm who do want that with those who see a bigger picture as well?
Don't listen to Katy Perry. That's your middle ground.
I don't think anybody does right there. Willingly anyway.
Wonderful.
All right, seriously, my son's awake. I have to go. Talk to you guys later.
In an affirmative sense, if anyone wants to try for an answer to that doesn't necessarily, I mean, it's easy to negate something, like, per se, but to find some middle ground that includes something, you know, describing something that is there rather than something that is not there anymore.
I know once you negate something, you wipe it from existence, so if you negate something, we can't keep on describing it.
No, so that's just the opposite of what, like, the guy who really poured a whole lot of work into this, George Lakoff, said, is that when you negate something, you preserve the idea itself in a negative sense, but, like, Katy Perry still exists in the conversation here now.
I've never heard of a Katy Perry song, believe it or not. How about that?
No, you probably have. I didn't know. I would have said the same thing, too, and I was like, oh, that's a Katy Perry song? Like, fuck, I don't want to rate that shit. Yeah, you most likely have, unfortunately. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what you guys listen to up there.
No, but do you know that sounds so much like one of them sexually transmitted diseases adverts in the 80s? You most likely have, you know, one of these. Yes, you heard of Katy Perry. It's like, oh, my God.
It's infectious.
And not fuck Katy Perry.
I have Tourette sometimes when I think about that woman.
Yeah, well, she's just a young American girl trying to make her way in society. You know, giving the breaks that everybody else has got. I had her eyes extremely big, because the only time I see her is on the magazine, and her eyes look really, really, really big.
She's probably doing a lot of cocaine. Probably.
There's a correlation between the size of someone's eyes and the amount of blow they're doing. Good. We go. My Matrix 101 next week. Oh.
What'd you say?
I was mucking about. You didn't hear it.
I just feel like my channel. I've got like 20 views on my channel and they're about to take it down. It's like, come on.
I love your channel. I've subscribed a while back.
Thank you. You and I think 45 other people. I have about 46 subscribers.
I made a comment about Lynn taking you to the map.
Your space station video was really good. The cord with the radio was, I had never seen it before. That was really interesting.
But thank you. Did you say Lynn taking me to the map?
Yeah, that was one of my comments.
Oh, like physically?
Oh, yeah.
Didn't he do like Taekwondo or something like that? Or
I don't know. You'd have to try your best, definitely.
Holy crap! I'm like 5'2". I mean, I don't know. I'm kind of short.
my money's on you. Anyway, that's pay per view, and that's their Christmas books index. So there you go. So tune in live.
Yeah, 1999. Lynn Rochelle.
Lynn Tell.
I think it's pretty funny.
Well, Lynn sounds like a real stand-up kind of guy anyway, so, you know, I'm
Lynn glad. Does not sound like a male. I'm sorry. She never struck me as a male at all. I don't know how that got, how people got onto that.
kicking, and she's just demonstrating how to break your toes when you kick. She knows what she's doing, really.
CIA, is that what you're saying?
She says she's a martial artist. I've seen an image of her doing a kick, and that's how you break your toes when you kick. Well, I think, like, she knows what she's doing, you know.
Maybe she's climbed Everest. No, no longer has any more toes. You say you don't think these things through, do you? God, there I am again, saving us right at the death. God.
Freemasons.
Thank God.
Not so Freemason says I should battle rap, Lynn.
Yes.
I got a couple lines to spit. I got a couple bars. On here live. Let's do that. I would love that. We need a little bit of comedy.
Yeah, I think we need a lot more comedy, I'll be honest with you, darling. I swear to God, we need a lot more.
How can you not find any of this just pure comedy? I mean,
mm-hmm.
I mean, we're all going to die never figuring any of this out. I mean, laugh a little bit. Come on.
It might as well point out what's fucking bollocks. Literally point out, like, have you seen that? That's why I laugh at politics. It really makes me giggle now, but
really?
I've gone beyond it. I've gone beyond it now. I'm like to people, right, I've had enough. I've been watching politics for, I'm 40, so I've been watching politics for about 20 years now, and it's wore off, I understand.
Exactly, it's like you get the jokes now. You know, I used to, when I first started listening to Alan Watt, like, I used to think he was really, like, ooh, kind of, like, annoying and stuff like that, like, I didn't really, like, understand him, but after a while, I was telling somebody, I was like, I think Alan Watt's pretty fucking hilarious, like, some of the things he says, like, makes me laugh. So, like, it's like, oh god, I had to work into that. Like, I had to, like, build myself up a little bit to understand what he's saying, and now it's just freaking hilarious. And I imagine if you could get to that stage, if you could watch enough politics, I imagine you might be able to, like, catch the inside jokes at some point. So,
it's exactly the same as watching Goonies. You watch Goonies when you're little, you laugh at the daft jokes, and then by the time you're 30, you're laughing at the way they got away with shooting up a girl's skirt and saying that the special stuff is from One-Eyed Willie. And then you realise, oh, right, we're watching some fucking sort of perv's dream. You know what I mean? There's a difference, but it's the same film.
Yeah.
You know, One-Eyed Willie. One-Eyed Willie.
But about a decade ago, Alan Watson was saying some real full things, but then he sort of went like a thing, you know what I mean?
Well, I say, but he was the dam, and obviously the dam has a certain level, and he was there already, so people were bashing into him, and then all of a sudden, you know, over the next few years, boom, the level rises, so now there's more people bumping into him, but nevertheless, it's still a dam. It's all a narrative, it's the funniest thing going, isn't it? Really, if you think about it, how funny is it? And so people are different, because they're born in different places. That's the funniest thing. You're from there.
It's hard to know what to make about him, but I learned loads from him and his reading list, you know what I mean?
Well, yeah, but you're meant to, right? That's the narrative we've got to follow. The thing they don't want you to realise is that everybody's the same. Yeah, everybody's the same. And then they say people aren't the same, but you can mould people through the education and environment, so people basically can mold anyone, so we are the same. So, you know, but that's what it is, come one contradiction after another. And then in between, you got the free man on the land, or whatever you want to call him, who has the choice, you know, and he gets to choose one or the other. And we get given stories of what's going to happen if you choose one, and we get given stories of what's going to happen if you choose the other. And then in between time, we're given a demos on TV, so if you're not sure what's going to happen, you can look on TV and you can see really what's going to happen. You know, you've got us covered, man.
Freeman on the Land and Laugh of Rebellion was a fucking big psyop.
Yeah, he invented, remember this
as well. Lost the Rouse.
This is the third Matrix, this. You know, wait for the fourth Matrix. Fourth Matrix is going to be mint. I'm having that one. Saying no. Bullshit, man. Give us. Like I say, all them Star Wars films start with people.
I have a funny I have a funny thought experiment. Do you think that there will be green markets or farmers markets in a virtual utopia?
Why?
Flying cars and shoelaces at stair-tied utopia.
Why would they?
I guess, like, in the sense that people recreate what they're, what they like, and, you know, like, the way that we talked about,
their... Do you really think that AI and utopia is going to take over that way? Do you really think AI is going to exist?
Yeah, I think I said before, I believe that machines are growing in skill with what we do in our minds.
I don't... That's really religious. You know that, don't you?
I mean, I'm not trying to preach it.
No, but you do sound more religious than someone who's religious. That is pretty crazy, man.
These machines are pretty cool, but that wasn't how I meant it. More about our own predispositions to go into communal trading.
Well, we've already invented planets that we can go and visit. So, you know, the prerequisition for our state is, you know, we have no idea what goes on 88 miles above our heads, and yet we've invented an entire universe. But don't worry about what we can take. We can take a lot, man. I'm saying average, you're accepting an awful lot. I don't accept any of that.
Well, I mean, we can complain that YouTube is falsely flagging our videos, but it, like, the way that it's doing it is by, I don't know, something that's only been possible in the recent time, as far as I know, because it like is actually analyzing the words, and it, you know, being able to understand language is pretty damn new, amazing skill. And I mean, it's getting better and better at the things that we do, right?
Apparently there's 10,000 new YouTube places, isn't there? In fact, they're having 10,000, pretty sure it is.
10,000 what?
YouTube place type of thing. YouTube stars, you know.
Video producers every day, is that what you're saying?
Please, YouTube take down inappropriate content like anything we'd be talking about, probably.
I'm only saying that, like, it's one example of machines doing something that takes a lot of insight or, you know, skill to understand things. But
yeah, well, they said 10,000 new YouTube police, but it might be 10,000 bots, for all we know.
What's that word? It starts with a P. Please, please.
Pussy. Oh, I'm looking at the wrong thing.
10,000 new YouTube pigs type of thing. It could be bots for all I know.
So in the virtual world, will people have what they want?
I wouldn't say so, because it'll be from the top down, won't it?
I think we're already in the virtual world. Do you have what you want, Phil?
Very good point. Well, I think I want something different. What?
It's relative. Currently, right now, I've got half of what I want. I have half a blunt. I'm going to roll another one. And I'm about to go get a fruit bowl from Jamba Juice. So that's what I want right now.
How much of what you guys want, just to leave within that realm, or to stay within that realm, would you say is, like, stuff that you would kind of question as programmed by the same people who, you know, if what we're saying is the hoaxers is a bad thing, like that realm of media or that commercial landscape, how much, because you said Jamba Juice, that's why I'm asking, like...
Yeah, we 95%. 95%?
What's the other 5, then?
Sleep, I need that.
What about the character who's always sleeping? No, I'm just kidding, I don't know. But like,
talking about me now, yeah.
A Rochelle character. No, but like, there's got to be some things that, I mean, or what would you guys say? You know, is it really like 95% that this media has defined our minds, our world?
I'd say they're even creeping into the way you use the bathroom, right? With the squatting and stuff like that. So, I mean, you know, typically you leave the... what would we call those natural bodily things alone, and, you know, that could be your 5%, but I don't even think that, I think that even the way people use the bathroom now is, I mean, even what bathroom to use is now being taught to us, so yeah. Fuck, I mean, sleep, I guess, is really, that's the only time I'm really left alone, right?
Or when...
So we think.
I think that people maybe garden for that just sense of, like, control over, like, having some small little few meals a week or, like, people want to have control over something innate, maybe.
So you just equated gardeners with control freaks. Okay, Phil. It's fine.
So what would be an extreme example where I would have really made my point?
No, I'm just playing with you. It's because that's what I do. I just play.
Well, then
you know, I wish I could play clips. I wish that I could turn every show I do into a clip show just to limit the amount of, like, talking that I actually have to do to save myself. But, I wish I could play clips. It would be so much fun.
Oh, yeah, like a soundboard.
Yeah, I guess that's how people do it. I guess I'm kind of living in the past here. I'm in the past. I have an iPhone. I have the iPhone 8, not the X, so I'm, like, way behind on technology.
Oh, you can do that with the iPhone X?
I actually have no idea what you can do with the iPhone X, except for, like, you can unlock the phone with your eyes. How cool is that?
Seems like just another programmed idea that you'd want that.
Oh, I so want that. It's just so cool. I mean, you know, who wants to, like, what's up with typing in a code? Like, you have to, like, I bet you have to, like, put your finger on the button and, like, type it in to, like, unlock the phone. Weirdo. Yeah, it's like, it just, like, how, I don't know, just how, does everything have to be so overly convenient? Like, how bad is it to, like, type in a code? I don't know. I don't feel like that's, like, saving me any time or anything or making things. Oh, you can pay with your eyes. Why not just, what's wrong with just paying? I don't understand what the problem is with that. Like, what's next, though? How much farther can they take it is the thing. It's because every iPhone keeps kind of upping the ante. And so what's the iPhone? What's after the X? Is it going to be the X? I don't know, accountant, fucking those Roman numerals or whatever. But whatever's after the X, I mean, how are we going to unlock it then? Is it always going to be with our eyes? Or I don't know.
Well, you'll upgrade to 9 and they'll come out with 11.
But that's... They skipped 9, apparently, and just went straight to 10.
Oh,
maybe they'll roll back to 9, and it'll just be, like, super badass. I don't know. I don't work for Apple. Yeah. Steve Jobs knew. He started that company in his basement, and he made the last iPhone and then worked his way backwards.
I guess we're very much in the living in the narrative in that sense that people make these types of things in their basement. I mean, in their garages. Like, that's how these things happen. Like, we're just...
Oh, you don't believe that? Yeah, I know. It's just so... I mean, basically, what it's pretty much saying is, okay, you're a piece of crap, Phil, because what have you done? Don't you have a basement?
You got a garage, though. What are you talking about?
I don't care. I don't want to hear any. Your fault. You should have fucking. You should have figured something out. Anybody can do it. I mean, they have 5-year-olds who are just fucking discovering things and stuff like that. So obviously, there's something wrong with all of us.
Especially you.
Oh, okay. I see what you're saying about overplaying. Sorry.
Yeah, it's just kind of like, I mean, it's like these shootings, too. They do the same thing, kind of like, you know, they're kind of trying to, like, teach people, like, it's almost like they're trying to, like, get people through the week, like, through the work week. Like, go, come on, you can do it. Look at this guy. He got shot in the eye, and he's fucking smiling already, like, the next day. What's wrong with you? He's already forgiven the shooter and everything, and he's moving on with his life, like... And what do you have to do this week? Oh, you just have to go.
That is a good way. That's like Dark City when they all get new identities overnight. 12 o'clock comes, and you know, one you might work in a news agency. The next day, you're a cabbie. It's like, yeah, you get over it. Don't worry. As soon as you get to me, like, boom. That, yes, I like that. That's a good way. Michelle said it. Just come on, get through the week. Get through the week. Yeah. There's your food. Here's your turmoil.
Yeah, like,
yeah,
you can do it now. You, like, aren't you guys, don't you feel better about your situation now that you saw that eight people in an entire family got murdered on a Sunday at church? And you got, I'm just so happy to be with my family. I wouldn't give it up for anything. I'm just happy for everything that's going on in my life. And, you know, I'm so blessed to be here. I feel guilty that I'm even alive. And then, so you look at yourself and you're like,
oh, and they've got TV. They've got the programs, you know, escapism, so that you can fall, but you can, get free work and they can go and watch Game of Thrones, whatever it's called.
You know, at least you can get up and go to work every day and come home and see your wife who fucking hates you, most likely. Not you guys, you know, at least you can do that. And, you got a couple bucks, you can go to Wendy's and get a burger, maybe, if you know, you can go have a beer or something like that. Like, but these people can't do any of that anymore because they died, eight of them.
Yeah.
I see this as the biggest defining point about living in the narrative or eating from the...
Sorry.
It's to believe it's to follow along with these events and follow it from the same media sources or even just part of the same stream of media, the same places or from the same people, basically, that's what it means to still be living on the farm or eating from the same ruler's table is to just believe all these same things instead of making the media, making the new programs, whether mental or what have you, like people could build their own homes it's just a hard thing to fully visualize, but I think that the biggest change would be to separate in the level of programming that you're using some other media source or some other inspiration for storytelling than shootings and Titanic boats sinking and I don't know what, like, it's the whole world, the whole meta narrative, the stories, it's all from the same group.
Yeah, you know, there's this really interesting YouTube channel that I could put up, and they just have little clips of certain things they're doing. I think it's called, it might be called The Art of Storytelling, or I'll have to find it before I cross my words or whatever, but it's pretty much just about storytelling and stuff like that. And if you go through that and you listen to these, they're creators, basically directors and stuff like that. Even some people involved with Disney, which I'm going to make a video on one of these guys. But if you listen to the way that they talk about storytelling and all the different mediums that they use and how serious they are about it and how storytelling is now interactive and all encompassing. It could point you into some pretty interesting avenues. But let me find that channel actually, because I love that channel. I watched, there's over like 200 videos and I've watched pretty much all of them. And so I'm kind of just like sitting back idly waiting for them to throw up another 200.
Like, also an angle on this interactivity today is the people going and holding the I Am Charlie Hebdo sign or going and putting a flower on the grave of a child
I love props, yeah. we've all seen the movie Wag the Dog. I mean, it's literally, they show you that with the shoes and all that stuff, you know, the props, like, yeah.
But, like, there must be, I was thinking about, that's part of what made me interested in other mythology than, I mean, I don't know, it was the Asatru or the Odin stream of mythology, and I was getting a lot of that from Red Ice Radio, ironically, though. So, I mean, regardless, it's like, there's no, like John's saying, there's no, like, full separation. It's still, like, humanity here, so what kind of different props are there to tell stories with is what I'm curious about.
Oh, are you serious? I mean, well, here again, this channel is properly named The Future of Storytelling. And, I mean, they'll just take you right through it. I mean, you tell stories with art, with, I mean, architecture is telling a story. I mean, and then, you know, transmedia, telling a story through different mediums over a certain amount of time, or parallel mediums and stuff like that. It gets pretty deep. And then you can kind of, you can see how they work these movements into these storylines, basically. Like one that I'm going to make a video. I always say I'm going to make a video. It's like 6 years later. I'm like, here's my video I talked about 20 years ago that I said I was going to make. But a video that I wanted to make on, which I partially am in the middle of anyway, called Stop the Bleed, though, which is a movement, basically. And it's about, you know, it's about teaching us. Well, this one particularly is about teaching us how to become first responders and not bystanders anymore. but you know, there's all these other different movements though, like, teaching us about humanity and stuff like that. So yeah, if you are tuned into that, you can pick it up a lot. Like, I always bring up Uzi too, because this is like, it's so obvious. Like, there's this whole homeless, like, be nice to the homeless kind of thing, like teaching people about that. So they'll have like, I don't know, like, they'll do, like, little social experiments or whatever, which are not social experiments, like, they're completely staged, but then it kind of gets people to, like, I don't know, change their ideas about certain things or whatever, but basically, I think these are forms of telling a story, and, like, they're using the stories to, like, make people react in a certain way, to move people in a certain manner, and I think that if we just stop being so reactive to stories, think of that might solve that problem. And it's usually based off emotion too. And I mean, I've been called pretty cold in my life, and so I think that's probably what insulates me from most of this. But sorry, I talk a lot.
It can react logically, or it can react emotionally, you know, doesn't it? A link to your Vimeo channel, Michelle.
Sorry?
Vimeo channel, please. Thumbed up.
Okay, The Future of Storytelling, I just linked that. Frost, some pretty much a lot of gold in there, you guys. I'm going to say a lot of freaking gold in there. Which, you know, it helps me understand, like, that we're kind of on the right track with this stuff, you know. I mean, here they are just spilling it all out. And there's some really interesting people in this, too, who are involved in a lot of different things. Shit, you can make a whole video just on this channel right here.
Where did you put it?
I put it in the live stream show notes. Am I not supposed to do that? Just put it in general. I'll put it in general.
Just, the first video I see as I open this is a sink, as to use another term in the revelatory media, a different stream of it, but a sink, whatever, you know. Yeah. I'm sure you guys know what I mean.
I mean, this, yeah, you, I mean, you just, I mean, one of those videos, I mean, you could just talk for hours about it. It's just like, what the actual fuck? It's hard. I always wanted to make a show called The Art of Articulation, because it's what I'm lacking in. And so, like, I feel like I have so much to say about it, but I have no way of, I'm in the embodiment of the Tower of Babel. Like, I just have no way of conveying, like, the things that I feel and the things that I think about, even one of those videos. But anyway. Because that's what I mean. I wish I could play clips. There's just a really good one I would like to just freaking go off on, but it's like 5-6 minutes long. One of the longer ones in this channel. Sorry, y'all. Or am I talking to the wind? I don't mind doing this, but although I am very insecure when I don't hear anything on the other end, so.
I can hear you, Rochella.
It's unfortunate, but yeah, I'm sorry.
I was just wondering if you had a link to your video.
Vimeo again? Okay, I'll do it again.
Yeah.
Oh, it's there's only one video up there, though, so it's not that big of a deal, but yeah, I'll link to it.
All right.
I clicked on a video and the one it says up next is whoever controls the narrative has the power.
A channel link. Oh, here. Oh, who has the ability to play clips on here? None of you? All good.
I think I might be able to. If it's really good.
You just play them down, like you put a video on, doesn't that come through the sound system or just your mic?
It would have to go speakers out the speakers and into the mic, so it wouldn't sound great.
Speakers, folks.
I mean, this is pretty much what you guys were talking about earlier with the virtual reality and all this stuff. I mean, this is the future of storytelling. I mean, they just get into it all. The future of fun is one of their videos and stuff like that. And the thing is that they put all this across in a really good way. I remember one time I showed, when I was back in my Alex Jones days, I showed the movie, the documentary Endgame to someone. I tried to get them in, like, right at, like 10 minutes into it. She's just like, I don't understand. Like, all this stuff is good. Like, so I'm just like, oh, okay. So, like, people just have a completely different way of viewing things. Like, even if it's for bad, like, they'll see the good in it. And, I mean, that's pretty much the way that all this stuff was put across. Like, this is completely biased when speaking about technology and the fact that it's all for good. Like, there are no consequences to any of this at all. So, keep that in mind when watching this and just how interesting that is, how it could never even come up. Like, it doesn't even seem like, you know, it's even thought about, which I guess never move forward if you did, I guess.
What is it? What are you referring to?
Sorry, I was just talking about how the future of storytelling, that channel and stuff like that, all those videos and the topics that they speak about them as only in the good aspect, basically. Like, none of the possibilities of the technology or anything that they're talking about being used for the wrong reasons is ever even brought up or thought about. So, yeah.
That's a nice change. No, I'm just kidding. But here it's like...
Right.
Kind of a flip of that, right?
Here?
Like Hoax Busters.
Yeah. Yeah. So what?
Well, I guess, yeah, I mean, I would still ask that same question, like, what, in terms of what we're getting, what are we willing to give up? What do you guys feel like is okay in your book to give up for where this is going?
Okay, I'll put my musket down as soon as I see everybody else put theirs down, okay?
I pulled up the channel for the future of storytelling. And I'll play it through my speakers for you. What Thank video you. Is it?
Oh, well, actually, I mean, one second, let me find one.
Do you have a description of it?
No, now I'm actually going off the fly here, and I was just wondering if anybody had, you know, because I felt like Phil was watching something that he was into, and I wanted him to share it with the class. But we could just throw on a random one and see what we think about it. They're like 2 minutes long.
Okay, there's one here about Anjali Sood, Sud, Linda Boff, Wendy Calhoun.
How about journalism and the digital age? Let's see what that one is.
Tell me if you can hear this. I'll try this quickly first before you go. Just one sec.
Actually understandable. We all thought about how do you get through this and make sure that you're going to...
Yeah, try yours now, though. Let's see what the other one sounds like.
I'm looking for that one.
Did that sound like it was coming over the speaker into the mic?
Yeah, it did, but it sounded muffled though slightly. But I did hear it though.
It wasn't really a loud clip or anything, so it would have needed. Oh. All right.
Need some volume steroids. Gotcha.
Yeah, I don't see the see it here.
Here, what's up? They've got storytelling with AIs. Oh, man. They just ran the gamut. Here. I don't think I've even seen this one. I like to hear what they're saying.
Anybody hear this?
Are you farting or something? We can't hear it.
Yeah.
No, I don't hear it. No.
Tech, that was just silence, then.
Yeah, it was.
Thank you.
This documentary is to document our world as it already is. Fiction is to fantasize about how it could be. Since architecture is the fiction of the real world. So turning dreams into concrete reality with bricks and mortar. Architecture is the canvas for the stories of our lives. The thing is never complete. It has a beginning, but it has no end. It's a work in progress, always waiting for new scenes to be added, new characters to move in. When I started studying architecture, I told people what I did. The most frequently asked question was always, can you tell me why all new buildings are so boring? People had the idea that in the past, buildings came with ornaments and decoration, moats, drawbridges, spires, and gargoyles. Today, they have been reduced to containers of space, boring and boxy. Somehow, so many of our choices today tend to settle with reaffirming the status quo by replicating what's already there rather than inventing what could happen next. I decided I wanted to change that. In the movie Inception, the architects find that they can finally realize their wildest dreams because they're in fact designing inside a dream. The architect hero Cobb explains how he and his wife want to live in a house with a garden, but prefer to live in a high-rise. In real life, we would have to choose, he says, but in a dream, we could get it as we wanted it. We've made a building in Copenhagen called the Mountain, combining a parking structure and an apartment building. By turning the parking into a man-made mountain of cars, we can turn the stack of homes into a cascade of houses with gardens, penthouse views, and big lawns. Cobb's dream home made in real life. Cobb's idea of bigamy, that you can take multiple desirable elements that might not fit together or even seem mutually exclusive, like the garden home in the high-rise, and merge them together into a new genre. You don't have to remain faithful to a single idea. You can literally marry multiple ideas into promiscuous hybrids.
All right, so that was...
He's Jesus in the wrong
one. What was that?
This is Future of Storytelling 2014, Jark Ingels, Worldcraft.
Okay, go, okay, yep, I've seen that one, yeah, where he's drawing on the board and stuff. Yeah, right. But I mean, so that's just kind of, you know, that's just one of the little things that they're talking about, but I mean, even that in itself is super interesting, you know, but they go into a lot of different other stuff too, so they even, like, talk about the sound stage and everything. It's a pretty interesting channel if you snap through it and stuff like that.
What was the name of it again?
Yeah, it sounds like there's some interesting nugs there. This one is called Worldcraft, Jark Ingels, Future of Storytelling 2014.
I put one up there in the general, journalism in the digital age. I mean, it's just stuff like that. It's like, you know, they even have one where they're talking about Disney and LARPing and stuff like that. So, and how they do shows in front of people without people knowing, and like they do all these tests and stuff at Disney World. So, I mean, there's some really interesting stuff, and it's all part of their story at Disney World. So it's like, what the fuck?
And they know exactly who they're doing it for because everyone's wearing a bracelet. So they, I don't know, something. I mean,
I was gonna do a talk on that one, but I guess I could find that one. But yeah, some pretty good stuff. Let me see.
Quote.
I got a quote. Every story starts and ends in the middle of another story.
Right. Future of Storytelling with Maker and Doer. I think Maker is like a studio that does a lot of stuff on YouTube. They have a lot of channels. Like they own, I mean, there's like, let's say there's thousands of studios, thousands of production studios, and within those studios, they might own thousands of channels. And so there's just a lot of channels that are owned by production studios on YouTube. It is completely flooded with it. And that's what I mean about interactive storytelling and stuff like that, and all this Lonely Girl 15 and Bray Taylor and all this stuff. I mean, it gets pretty deep, and it gives me a fucking headache talking about it, too, honestly.
The vastness of the controlled media?
Just how deep... Well, yes, we'll put it there, Phil.
I go through so much effort to find stuff that isn't... like, it just takes such... extreme, and the content isn't even that good usually, but it's still good in a sense.
I'm watching a video right now on this FOST, Future of Storytelling, and it's called Stories for Change.
Yes.
And they're talking about how they need to use stories to affect people's opinions and so forth. And they're showing a list right now on the screen of partners, what they're calling partners that they've worked with.
And yes.
I see Sandy Hook Promise here.
Yeah.
I see the AIDS Vaccine Fund.
Yeah. I mean, they just literally just lay it out for you.
So there's only like another minute and a half here. I could just play, see what they say.
Please do.
All right.
Really excited about the work that Met is doing with Earth Day Network, bringing in a new crowd of environmentalists, using innovative ways to draw people in and get them all moving in one direction to protect the planet for generations to come. One of the other very exciting collaborations, Oscar-winning Framestore, is working with Constellation. What Constellation has done is pull together astronauts that have been in space over years, where they see that there are no borders. We're all one country working together.
By sharing your story,
you're going to see reinvention all over the place. It's going to inspire a new generation. Really excited that FOSS is going to be right there at that heart of collaboration.
You're listening to another hour of Fakeologist Audio Chat on Fakeologist.com.
Hooray for space! Yay. Space isn't a story. What do you mean? It's not like it's an allegory for something.
Should I start it back up?
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'll take a photo of the screen. I'll back it up when it's done and get a list, show that list of people they work with.
Yeah, Mr. Mason, because the pick or it didn't happen.
All right.
They're also a company that is leading when it comes to how their business practices affect the world. I'm proud to have a partner like HP who really understands the potential for business when used for good.
I feel like that's really awesome. At society wise. What we're trying to do is create these campaigns and these effective, innovative stories that can be carried on to large audiences, to funding communities that can really make sure that we're moving the earth in society forward. And that's what HP is all about, utilizing our technology to make life better for everyone.
I think right now more than any time I can remember.
They just showed Edward Snowden up on the screen.
Thank you. Can I get in on that making the world a better place or whatever? Shit. I'm here too. I mean, fuck. Who gives these guys the right? Well, they have the money. Well, fuck that. Dude, give me a call. Here's my number. I mean, isn't that just gold? You know, anybody want to do a clip show with me? Like, I don't know. There's nobody here listening or whatever. Anybody?
I love talking clips. Yeah, if you got some clips.
Yeah, we should do a clip show one day when you got time or whatever. I could lay it out because I pretty much just don't have the ability to do it. But I've got
a name. I've got a name for a clip show.
Okay.
Yeah, me and James have kicked around the idea. So, maybe we got we
can, let
actually
me
pull the trigger. But it's called Faux Agenda, like FAUX.
I don't get it.
Like fake, no. You know, fake, faux, no agenda.
I know.
Hey, yeah, to explain that to me, then that was hard. That man, faux agenda. Yeah. That was. Can't you just call it FO agenda?
Launch the show, Mason. You got to.
I don't think that has the same meaning. But
no, I know, but that's too cerebral.
Launch the show for Mason. We'd have to record it separately, too.
I can't believe I'm critiquing a show that's not actually been made yet. Sorry.
Launch it. That's what I said. Make the show.
Good evening, up.
Good evening, Not-So-Freemason, Napoleon, Rochello, Phil Blank.
the founder, the father. I love how you pop up on top of our name.
The sysop. I don't know why I'm up at the top.
You're always at the top. You sit us all down. Yeah.
How did I get that? I don't know. I have no idea. I didn't write the software.
And you're your wizard picks you so funny.
I just listened to a really funny song at the end of the last No Agenda show called White Privilege. It was funny. Oh. To the tune of White Christmas. I'm not trying to bring you down, Rochelle, but it was just funny.
Yeah, it hurts. Yeah, my feelings are immediately hurt. So that's how you come into your own show, huh? I'm just putting people down, huh? No, that's
I just come right in and I just start smacking them around, Rochelle.
You have the right to do that.
Coming in there, waving your big wiggly wand.
Let me know when you start your show, Freemasons, so I don't have to deal with this.
Yeah, we'll do.
No,
let me ask you, Rochelle, is there such thing as white privilege to you? I know you're right. You identify as black.
Olivia.
Go ahead. Give it to me good.
Maybe.
Give it to me straight, girl.
It's speculative. It's.
Whoa. Rochelle's a girl.
Napoleon, you're over-modulating a bit. Back off a bit. Back off a bit.
It's speculative. I don't know. No comment.
Oh, come on. Get down in there.
I'd have to think about it, you know?
All right.
I'd have to think about that. I don't like the word, first of all. I mean, I don't like the word.
It's okay. We can take it. I admit I'm white.
Are you?
Do I have to admit that?
Are you really, Adam?
I am.
Is everybody in here white?
I'm pretty Caucasian.
I didn't know that. See, that's the thing.
Napoleon, I'm not sure about him. I think he's mulatto.
You're from the Caucasus Mountains?
No.
See, I didn't know that. I feel uneasy around you guys. I don't know what to say.
No. We have much more in common than skin color. I'm only bringing it up because it's a divisive issue that keeps being circulated all the time.
There would be white privilege, but there's black privilege too. You know, I think it depends on what situation you're in, and that's all I can say about that. It's, you know, it truly does depend on what situation you're in and the kind of people you're around. So, you know, what's a privilege to somebody? You know what I'm saying? It's, again, it's whatever you want to think about it, I guess.
Yeah.
Horrible question, Av. Ooh.
I am sorry. Did I bring, were you guys talking about something fakeologist related? Because really, we shouldn't be talking like this on this channel.
I have PTSD now, so.
Uh-oh. Head to your pharmacist.
And Napoleon thinks I'm a dude, apparently, which is...
I never said you were a dude.
Which is hilarious.
He just wanted you to prove that you're a woman to him, that's all.
Well,
he's getting male privilege right now. He's being sexist.
I'm wiggling my wand around. Yeah. And I am the biggest. I'm probably the whitest person in it. But I did grow up around African, white, Muslim, and lots of other people. I was the only white lad in my class for 2 years. So please forgive me for waving my ethnic wand around because I'm pretty much brown. I'm a half.
Napoleon, move your microphone a little away from your mouth, a little away. You're pulling my ear out.
Sorry, man.
You're hurting my ear. You're giving me
Don't apologize about it. Just do it, Napoleon.
Oh, I will do this thing. Don't you worry, darling.
Not so Freemason. Go.
Yeah, I was going to say, what we were talking about was this, these guys that are writing stories that Rochelle brought up, and I put on a video. We played some of it. And
you mean Black Rochelle?
Yeah, that one.
Yeah.
And we saw that one of the organizations
that
I work with
is
called Sandy Hook Promise. So I Googled Sandy Hook Promise, and they came out with a video 3 days ago, and I really think this is worth a listen.
Okay, let's hear it.
Oh my god. Wait, let me get a bag of puking. Okay, go ahead.
Wait, it's the Sandy Hoax anniversary, right? What is it, the
5th
year?
It was a couple days. It was on the 12th, yes, and I cried like half the day, but go ahead.
Here we go.
Well,
here at the scene of tomorrow's shooting, where a 15-year-old will kill 4 children, 2 adults, and then turn the gun on himself. When the shooting starts happening tomorrow, first I'll probably just think it's firecrackers or a car backfiring or something. He told some of us that his dad kept the gun in his closet, and he always talked about using it on, you know, the people that bullied him. Tomorrow I'll probably say that I wish I told someone.
Now, after the shooting, we're going to feel pretty bad about picking on him, but until then, we'll probably just keep doing it because he's pretty weird.
Tomorrow I'll probably point out that something has seemed off with him since the beginning of the school year. And I'm now joined by the officers who will be the first responders tomorrow. What additional details can you share with us?
Well, someone is expected to tell us after the shooting that the shooter has been posting on social media about doing this for weeks.
So how will you explain the shooting to your daughter? Actually, I won't get to explain it to her because she won't make it. This is Christine Lynn, reporting from the scene of another shooting. We'll say we never saw coming.
It seems like they got the script to me.
Wow.
Where was that? I'm a little confused. Where was that?
This is a video that Sandy Hook Promise came out with. And Sandy Hook Promise is a nonprofit organization that aims to change gun laws.
So can you quickly explain to us what just occurred?
Okay. Last year, Sandy Hook Promise gave us this is a quote from the article, what I thought was the film of the year, and I covered it in my post. The power of this film is that you don't see the point coming. It was provocative. This year, Sandy Hook Promise keeps the momentum going with a new film, provoking the same response, but in a very different way. It's a film I sincerely hope you'll show at least one young person you know. So what I was reading before that, though, was, about Sandy Hook Promise, their goal is to change gun laws. That's their stated mission.
They're talking about making the Sandy Hook story. That's what it sounds like to me. The day before when the drills are happening, you know, it's like a behind the scenes, on set interview of each of the characters. That's what it sounds like.
Yeah, it sure sounds that way.
I think the gun laws aren't really going to be changed in a generation. I think it's really just to change young people's attitudes towards the Second Amendment and make them so confused about what it really or it used to stand for that they're not going to care about any amendment rights that they may have been given by the Founding Fathers. And it's an incremental thing. I think it's a generational thing. And they're just doing this to change young people's minds, because you're not going to change older people's minds about guns. So they really want to target the youth of America.
Yeah, and it looks like they're employing this future of storytelling that Rochello brought up.
Okay.
I don't know. She knows a little bit more about it, I think, than I do, but it's pretty interesting.
Well, yeah, I think that, I don't really know anything about it, really. I think that really what it is, like the future of storytelling, is just all these different genres of the way that they get their point across, I guess, and the way that they get people, because ultimately what a story is meant to do, like they said, they're meant to, like, change the way we think about things, change the way we act, and all this stuff. And so now the way that they get us to do that is through, like, some really insidious things, that are interactive and seem real and seem grassroots, I guess, but they just simply aren't. Like, they're super manipulative. So this channel, Future of Storytelling, just shows you how much they thought about this and how deep that they've gone, and all these institutions that are set up around this, creating these stories and these movements that are affecting us all in so many different ways all throughout our days. So...
who set this up? Is there some big foundation behind it?
Oh God, this is just a YouTube channel, and now that you say that, because they're saying, yeah, I got to look into more of what actually the future storytelling is. If it's more than just a channel, and it's like some institution, but I think it might be just that. because they said that we're so proud for that the future that FOST can be involved in this. And so it might be some think tank or something, to be honest with you. I'm not quite
sure. Yeah, foundations. Foundations usually, I learned this through the No Agenda Show. All these are not grassroots. They're all astroturfing. And foundation, big foundation money's behind all this. These are rich, super rich, and all their corporations, and they all get together, and they're just, that's their goal, is to change laws and society and culture. What else can they do with their money? You can't just keep buying, yachts to sail behind. Really.
Yeah.
So they're interested in changing culture, and all they can do is money and convert it into propaganda through all the different medias. I'm sure all the big YouTubers are backed to some extent by foundation money.
There's no, you couldn't even question.
They have to be.
They are 100%. They absolutely are. So.
And they don't disclose it either. They should.
No.
At least PBS would always tell you, okay, this foundation, that foundation gave to this show. But you could see the agenda, perhaps.
Yeah, and like I said, and again, you know, I guess I can post the link to socialblade.com, which is a website that shows YouTube, it shows the sponsored ones. I mean, you can type in a channel. You can see that some of these channels that are owned by companies and production studios are, they rate these channels A to F, A to B, D.
Yeah.
And some of these channels that are owned by production studios are like a D-. That's their rating, and they have like very low views, but they're still part of this production company, you know what I mean? So I'm saying the biggest and even the smallest are owned by these companies. So people wouldn't believe that, but it's like that's literally what's going on. And then also on Social Blade, I mean, it lists a lot of them that are, but then there's ones that you totally know that are, but they won't be listed on there. Like maybe like the Young Turks or something like that or something, you know what I mean?
Yes.
So yeah, like it's like it's incognito. Like, nope, this guy's totally real and totally legit. Not buying it.
Well, even the small ones might become big one day, so they have to back a lot of horses.
Okay. The future of storytelling is a summit. Yeah, basically, top executives, creative talent, technologists to explore how storytelling is changing in the digital age. So.
Well, now they're using software to just take a person's voice sample, maybe get a bunch of words, and then you can take the words and just type them out and make that person say different things. Voca, I think it's called Voca software by Adobe. First they change the visuals, then they change the audios.
Right. Now they have this, and they're going to change the visuals again, like with this, the iPhone, with the Animatrix or something like that. Animatrix. Oh, yeah. Animoji, yeah. Animoji your face. Animoji yourself. So, yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
Thanks, Snapchat. All this overlaying of virtual reality and all this stuff, it's coming. It's coming pretty fast, but it's actually pretty slow, but it's just interesting that we're seeing it now. I mean, here it is now. We're here now. So, I don't think that the future is tomorrow. Or, like, down the road. I think that we are literally living in the future right now. Like, I mean, literally. Like, basically, the only thing about it is that we are forced into the past. Like, we're forced to live in what we consider is the past, but it's actually literally the future. Like, so they're just kind of, like, dosing, giving us small doses of what it could really be, like, full-blown. But I'm convinced that this is the future now.
I found the board of advisors for FOST, Future of Storytelling.
Nice.
Okay, the FOST Summit is made possible by the support of its board of advisors. Members of the board include former Vice President Al Gore, Beth Comstock, CMO of General Electric, Catherine Burns, Artistic Director, Chief Diversity Officer is Garcia Quiroz of Time Warner. They got someone here from Museum of Modern Art, MoMA. So, yeah, Al Gore, yeah. GE, Time Warner.
Sound like a bunch of good people.
Totally, yeah.
Yeah.
I watched them slowly dose out the agenda and what they're doing over, like, two-minute, three-minute clips over, like, 268 videos.
It says they've collaborated with J.J. Abrams.
Oh, yeah.
That's pretty big.
That's top media. Top media. Top influencer.
Here we are. Yeah.
It's J.J. Abrams.
J.J. Abrams took over this Star Wars franchise and turned his lives upside down. It's 77 Abrams and a continuation of the Abrahamic faith being pushed onto our screens with Star Wars. I love it. Brilliant. Don't be calling Star Wars. Brilliant. Yeah, it gives me something to follow. People have the Bible, I have Star Wars.
Yeah, well, did he do Lost and did he do The West Wing?
Sort of prepared people for being let down.
I don't know. I couldn't care less about Star Wars, so.
No, but unconclusion on TV, really.
Did you guys like Lost?
No, Phil told you the fat guy in Lost should have lost some weight, but he never did.
Okay, well, aside from that one thing.
Well, that's it straight away. That's like the Kennedy assassination. Yeah, no.
I didn't watch it. My wife did. I didn't watch it. Anyone else watch it?
It's great storytelling.
Well, did they ever get off the island, or was that Gilligan? I can't remember.
Yeah, they got off and then got back on and got back off or what have you.
Okay. Go ahead, Rochella.
I was just when I remember when I was researching this topic a little bit ago. I could probably pinpoint like when I started really getting into it, because I remember walking through the aisles or whatever, and I can't remember what country music star it is. Blonde girl, obviously they're all blonde or whatever. White blonde girl, country music star, don't you know what I'm talking about? Her album is called Storytelling. So I was like, oh my god, like I just started seeing it everywhere after I started looking into all this. So let me post a picture of it though.
Okay. Must be Carrie Underwood. She does everything in country, doesn't she? Maybe not.
Yeah, I think you're right. I guess I could use my pad for this, but yeah. Anyway, I literally hear crickets in the background. Wayfaring Stranger?
Anybody can jump in? Wayfaring Stranger's from Casablanca. Who can say they're from a place that sounds better than that?
I thought that was only in a movie. Yeah,
no, it's so exotic.
It actually existed.
Wayfaring Stranger, what's the weather like in Casablanca?
Yeah, is everything in black and white there?
It's night, so no. I can't tell you what's the weather right now. I mean, how?
All right. Okay.
The weather's top secret.
Can't go out at night? Stick your finger out the window.
No, I mean, though.
And what's the wind direction? Quick.
It is cold, though.
Okay.
That's all we need to know.
And I bet you it's raining in Portland.
Freezing rain, hopefully so. It dropped a little bit of rain today, but don't get it started. It's kind of clear right now, I believe.
All right. You're in between rainstorms.
Yeah. her album's called Storyteller. Oh, excuse me.
Pretty close.
Close enough. Oops. Tony, I would walk right past this girl. I didn't even know what she looked like.
Yes, I'm not a country person myself.
Well, 22,000 people are, at least.
Yes. Yes, at the Las Vegas event, yes. That's a distant memory, isn't it? I think, are we going to get a PSYOP before the end of the year, or do you think that's it?
I think that everybody's on Christmas break right now.
Even the PSYOP division lays down their work for the Christmas break?
Oh, yeah, I think that they definitely do. Yeah, I mean, otherwise they have to pay overtime. It's mandatory.
Yeah. Well, I remember back in the Sandy Hook year, whatever year that was, that was talked about all the way to the end of the year. They put that just before the break, and then everyone was talking about it for weeks. It didn't go away for weeks.
Yeah. Yeah, it was right before, on the 14th or something, yeah.
Yeah. I remember we talked about that at a Christmas party. That was just when I had my fakeologist knowledge. I didn't want to break it out for the party. Didn't think it would go over good.
Yeah. What'd you get Timmy for Christmas? Well, let me tell you about Sandy Hook real quick. What the fuck are you talking about? God, great. Now I have an image of Carrie Underwood saved on my fucking computer. Fuck Carrie Underwood too, fucker. No, but you know, so 22,000 people at Las Vegas. I hear that it was 22,000 people over the course of like 3 days. I don't think that there were actually 22,000 people there on the last day. So I think that makes a difference, to be honest with you.
Well, it'd be interesting if you could get a real witness that you could trust to tell you what they heard or saw and how it lined up at all with the official story.
Yeah. You said a real witness, right?
Well, yeah. It may be impossible to verify, of course, but that's the problem, isn't it? Impossible to verify who is a real witness.
Yeah, I don't think that I don't think that they would be on the news. That's for sure.
No, they would not. No,
or on podcasts saying that there was a second shooter, which is what is happening right now. I actually spent half the day listening to not half the day, but you know, I was listening to some of these witnesses at the Las Vegas shooting who say that there was a second shooter. Yeah, and people are like, they're witnesses. They're talking about the alternative theory. It's literally like 9/11, them saying people had bombs in the building. I mean, yeah, they're setting up an alternative like view.
Yes, for sure.
And so that's why.
We would literally have to rely on one of them to stumble upon fakeologists on their own, and we'd have to hope they're not an agent. That's all we could do, if you think about it.
Yeah.
Hey, Ed. Yeah. Hey, Rochelle. I know a guy here in New Zealand who told me that his friend was there, you know, and I've never clue who this person is or anything like that. I've never met him. That's what he reckons.
Where was he?
At the Vegas shooting.
Well, what did he see? I mean, I don't know the person,
and trust me, I don't believe that. Obviously, that was a psyop. I wonder whether or not they ran it in such a fashion that there were, you know, uninformed members of the public running around screaming.
Well, yeah.
You know,
that's why I wanted to find this video on the future of storytelling. I have no problem believing that there was actually a concert happening there. Now,
I think so.
I feel like I keep repeating myself and stuff like that. And not like, oh, you don't, like, I just don't know when I've said this before or not because I smoke a lot. But before even looking into the Las Vegas shooting or whatever, the first thing I thought when I saw, like, that it happened, I'm like, okay, I guarantee you that this happened in the VIP section. Like, you know what I mean? This is where most of the crap went down, was in the VIP area. And so, I'm not even looking into it or whatever, and I'm like standing in line getting something to eat, and I just look up at there's a TV in the corner, and I hear the guy, one of the witnesses, like, I was in the VIP section, and then blah, 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 and I just rolled my eyes. It's like, you know, like, I shouldn't know that, you know what I'm saying? But it's just like, that's how I feel like they get away with this stuff, though, you know, because it was the same thing in Boston. It was the VIP section where, you know what I mean, most of the crap.
Oh, really?
And
the people that were up close, close people, everyone else is kept at a distance, yeah.
Yeah, and so I kind of feel like that might be part of the logistics to this Mandalay Bay thing, too, is, yeah, there are people in the crowd, but I think the majority, they had a VIP tent, they had all kinds of things going on, so, you know.
Yeah,
I think that they had it pretty much.
And when you're at these concerts and you're far back, you can't see a damn thing. That's why I don't go to concerts usually, unless I can get up close, and then I have to really want to pay that kind of money. Because when you're in the back of a stadium, you can't see a thing. Ridiculous.
Yeah. And here's the thing. Everybody knows about lip syncing, right? And this is pretty much all I'm playing the hat down. Like, do you think that Jason Aldean was really singing there? No way. And so the music, it all stops at the same time, his voice and everything. If something really had happened, like, you would probably catch him lip syncing. Do you know what I'm saying? But no, everything played out perfectly with the sound and stuff like that. I don't believe that he was playing.
I think that you really need a huge top band with their own crew and a huge crew do a really good show that's live with good sound. And I'm talking about tractor trailers full of equipment. And because otherwise the sound is never going to be that great. And therefore lip syncing or just playing the song is far more effective.
Yeah.
Really.
And so basically what it all comes down to is just watching the Jason Aldean thing. If you believe that he was actually singing, then maybe you can get, maybe, you know what I mean, you can believe the rest of the story. But if you already know that he's lip syncing, then that was literally part of the show because of how everything stopped, the guitar and all stopped at the same time. There's no way he's out there playing for 3 days for 22,000 people or whatever. It's just not happening. That's just not how they run. That's just not how they do big concerts anymore. I mean, seriously.
Well, they never did. And it's just because you got to get the sound really, really good. And right. To like do a live music show, it's really difficult because people want to hear a concert just like they hear it on the radio or on their
album, right? So
yeah, they don't
want
to hear.
Case closed. He wasn't singing. Everything stopped perfectly. Case closed.
I don't think anyone's against lip syncing. I think people just didn't really know until Milli Vanilli came along that it was the way concerts were done. I really don't think people were aware, not that they really cared, but it came across as just egregious deception. I remember when Milli Vanilli came along. But people, I think they were just a scapegoat for saying, okay, these guys do it, but nobody else does, because these guys were caught. Otherwise, everyone would be caught. But no, I think most bands, or many, many bands, it's much cheaper just to play the track than to try and get the sound. Sound the same, especially in a concert hall or
a
stadium. Sound just bounces all over the place otherwise. Really hard.
I'm sure that there are people who can do backflips and flip around and do that all stuff and sing and, you know, sing and dance at the same time like that, like Chris Brown or Britney Spears or whatever, but it's like, no way. Like, they're obviously lip syncing. They can't be doing, they're getting on freaking, they're freaking getting on elevators.
Otherwise, you're out of breath. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
You're
going to
be recording.
You're out of breath. Yeah.
Yeah, you can't do a backflip and try and hit a high note.
No.
You just can't. Your body cannot multitask like that.
It's complicated enough playing a guitar and getting the breath right for singing.
I'm sure, yeah. I don't even know how you can play guitar and sing anyway. Yeah, that's really hard.
Yeah.
That's literally like, what is it, you rub your stomach and tap your head? A lot of people can't even do that.
Yeah, Jason Aldean's a piece of crap. He wasn't frickin' playing there at that show, and that pretty much sealed the deal for me. Like, come on, man. You go back and watch the video and listen to how perfectly everything stops. I just absolutely cannot believe that. Like, I just don't believe that at all. Sorry, not buying it.
I can't watch the video. Anyway, I'm going to step out, guys. Have a good night. Thanks for entertaining me.
Have a good night. Oh, probably gonna get some juice and stuff too, but not so Freemason. One day soon, we should get together and we can play some clips or whatever. You play some, I play some.
All right, sounds good. I'll go looking through my bookmarks, see if I can find some interesting videos I've come across.
Oh gosh, it's gonna be fun. Yeah, definitely. Looking forward to it. Well, I guess I'll say adieu to you all, and I will speak to you guys again later.
All right. Have a good one.
See you. Just missed her. Never mind. So what clips are you thinking of playing, Mason?
I don't know. The only thing that's coming to mind right now is that House in the Middle. I know I played that before on the live stream, the nuke footage where they're saying if you keep a tidy house, it'll survive a nuclear blast compared to a less well-kept home.
Oh, yeah, because you cut down the house fires.
Yeah, it's really good. But, I'm just in here eating some fried chicken right now, so it's kind of hard to talk.
Hello, this is Without a Trace. Heard my name mentioned a few times by Rolo and Misum and others. Just wanted to drop in and see what condition my condition was in. I'm doing all right. Been listening to some long audio chats. Very interesting stuff. Been busy taking care of my late brother's estate, my brother Jim. He was 65. He had just gone into a nursing home type facility. Had cirrhosis of the liver and a lot of other health problems, kidney failure and such. And he died on November 24th, and he left me in charge of his final expenses. So had some business to take care of at the funeral home and with an overdraft bank account, and he had a title that needed to be turned over to somebody he had given his van to. Anyway, that type of thing. It kind of sad. I want to offer my condolences to Rolo on the loss of his mother and know what he's been going through. Always sad to lose someone close. Well, guys, I'm going to check out. I don't know what, if any of this was recorded, but just want to say hello and give a shout-out to everybody, and keep on trucking. Later.
Hi, this is Vidara Lissette, and you're listening to Fakeologist Radio at fakeologist.com.